Bite into a Stack sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams of protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises. Just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread see nutrition facts on hero.co.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy.
Today's trigger warnings are mentions of suicide and suicidal thoughts, sexual assault, consensual non-consensual play, graphic sexual content, and violence.
And we have a review to read. And this Yay! One is from Molly69.
Nice.
Nice. It says, awesome podcast. They are funny and I like how the newbie reacts to listening to them talk about the smut books they are reading. Thank you.
Thanks. And today's book is God of Malice by Rena Kent. And how many stars did you give it on Goodreads, Jenna?
Jenna loved this one, right?
I loved this book. I gave it 5 stars.
And you read the rest of the series, right?
Yeah, I read all of them.
Oh my God.
The contrast between the two of you.
I know. There's one that I haven't read, but I'm going to. I just needed like a little bit of a break because I spent my entire week reading the rest of the series, but I'm going to read it.
Are you well?
I'm so well.
Oh God.
I'm so good.
I gave it a 3.5.
Saw that
Not
coming.
My jam. I liked the beginning of it, and then I just have such an issue with these super dark, broody characters that are like 19. Because I'm like, you're
Bitch,
a child.
What do you know? Yeah, what do you know?
Like, I picture like Gossip Girl. Like, you know how like Chuck Bass?
He owned a bar in high school. What the
no,
fuck?
No, I know, but like that's why I'm like, oh, that's fine. I'm sure, like, whatever.
Yeah, if he was like mid 30s or something, I'd be like, probably 4, maybe 4.5, but he's a child. You don't know what you're doing with your penis. You're not in an elite mafia club. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because, like, how many bitches could you have fucked at 19? What do you know?
Yeah.
Well, life experiences.
I ate it up. At first, I did give it 4 stars. But then, the whole next day, like, I'm not kidding you, it literally lived rent-free in my head for an entire day. Like, I went to bed and I had a dream about it. And then I woke up and I was thinking about it. And then I went to work and I told everyone about it. And I was like, I'm obsessed with this book, so I guess I should just up it a little bit to 5 stars because I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, that sounds like it warrants a 5-star for you. I tried to forget it as soon as it was done.
You're like, I need a cold shower.
It was really well written. It was just the age for me. I have such a hard time getting past it when they're teenagers acting like they're like hardened criminals. I'm like, shut up. Go do some homework. I don't know. Go get a part-time job at Subway.
Change your life around while you can.
Yeah.
It's a college mafia romance. Like,
well, at least be like a senior in college.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I totally get it.
I'm like, I don't know. But that's just my opinion. But like I said, it was very well written. So no hate to Rena Kent at all. I just, the age gets me.
Mm-hmm.
With any book, if any book is written about teenagers and they're acting like they're hardened criminals, immediately I'm like, eh. All right, are you guys ready?
Let's do it.
So our female main character, her name is Glendon.
Glendon?
Glendon.
What a name.
And she's British.
Yeah, she's British.
Mm.
It's 2 a.m. during Easter break. break, when she comes out to the cliff where her friend Devlin died a few weeks ago. She's standing at the cliff overlooking rough waves and picturing the day that he died. She's lost in thought, thinking about the last words he ever said to her, which were, "I'm so sorry," when a flash of light startles her and she falls backward toward the edge of the cliff. She's grabbed around the waist by a muscular stranger, and she turns to look at him and sees that he's ominously handsome and has a camera covering his face.
What does that mean?
He's like darkly handsome, like dangerously handsome. There's something dangerous about him.
Okay, a little mystery.
His vibe is like, ooh, like, ooh. Yeah. She realizes that the flash was him taking photos of her, like as she's contemplating jumping off this cliff.
Normal.
This is the most normal thing this man does, so.
I'm dead.
He looks down at the photograph he's just taken and he says, "Stunning." And then he looks at her and he's like, "Not you, the photograph."
Okay. I'd be like, okay, why'd you say that?
She's like, "What the hell are you doing?" And he says, he's commemorating the moment if she falls to her death. It'll be a good addition to his collection. And he lets go of her wrists and she falls backward again, screaming as little rocks crash over the cliff and into the choppy water. She asks him to help her up off the ground and he just lights a cigarette and blows smoke into her face and is like, "Why don't you finish what you started so I can get my masterpiece?" And she asks him if he seriously thinks that a photo of her death would be a masterpiece.
What a peach.
Yeah, he's so cute.
So handsome. I love when men talk to me like that. "Not your death, no. It'd look too bloody and displeasingly gory when your skull is smashed against the rocks below. Not to mention that the current lighting won't be able to capture a good picture. It's your fall that I'm interested in. Your pale skin will have a wonderful contrast against the water." Okay.
She does not know this man.
Call the cops. I'd say, "Oh, worse. I'm about to die."
I just picture like vampire vibes. Like I picture like if he was like an artist, like from like the 1700s. Like I don't know, like a angsty like artist vibe.
Mm. I'd be more into it if he was a vampire. But he's Same. Just like a teenage boy. So shut up.
Why can't he be a fucking vampire?
Honestly, she's at the very edge of the cliff and asks for help getting back up. So he grabs her wrists again and says that he could fling her over at any time, and she's at his mercy. He says that she has until he finishes his cigarette to convince him to save the damsel in distress, and she says she'll do whatever he wants. And he says he wants her to get on her knees and say please, and she's like, I'm not doing that. She said whatever he wanted, but she's like, no.
She's like, oh, nope, that crosses the line.
So he pushes her back and her legs are dangling over the edge and she's like, okay, please. He hikes her up and says, okay, halfway there, and pushes her head down until her knees hit the gravel and says, okay, now let's get started. She's like, get started with what? And he says, your payment for saving you. And she says, she's still right at the edge of the cliff and doesn't feel very saved right now. And he says that when she fulfills her promise of giving him whatever he wants, he'll let her go. And she's like, okay, well, let me stand up and I'll do whatever. And he says, no, what I want involves you in this position.
Good grief. No, what I want happens in this position. And what do you want? Your lips around my cock.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, ooh. Oh, gross.
Yucky.
Oh, no. I can't do that.
Gross. Ugh, we hate him. She's shocked and doesn't understand what the fuck is happening or how she got into this position. And he says if she's not into it, he has alternatives in mind.
His fingers slide down to my throat and he squeezes the sides hard enough to make me lightheaded and establish who holds control in the situation. You can get on all fours so I can stick my cock in one of your remaining holes, probably both, and in no particular order.
Woof. He says, I'm going to give you a UTI and I'm not going to feel bad about it.
That's where I draw the line.
I'm going to put it in your butt and then in your pussy.
Absolutely not.
I'm going to make truffle butter.
No! You're going to have to go get ciprofloxacin after this.
Oh, you're going to need antibiotics because you're going to be sick.
She waits for his grip on her throat to relax and takes the opportunity to get up and book it, but she barely makes it anywhere before he's got her around the throat again and pushes the top of her head down to force her onto the ground again, and she chokes out a breathless please.
Please use your lips, or please use your cunt and ass. He pauses, then pushes me backward until my upper half is tilted in the cliff's direction, or please turn you into a masterpiece.
He is a teenage boy.
Scary. Carrie.
She realizes there's no way out of this and struggles to say lips. He lets her get in some oxygen and she finally gets a good look at him and he's breathtakingly beautiful, but she knows that it's insane to think that right now, given what he's doing to her.
Yeah.
Jenna's like, I get it.
No, I think he's hot. No, if it was just like, if this was like real life, I don't even know what I would do, but like, I'm just biased right now.
Hypothetically, it's kind of cute.
To me, cute.
The stranger from hell slides his thumb against my upper lip, sensually, almost lovingly, and it's even more frightening because from the way he's behaved and talked, I'm almost sure there's not a gentle bone in his body. You'll let me stuff my cock between these lips and fill your throat with my cum? Will you? You'll let me put my pee-pee in there?
She says she's not doing it willingly. He's literally threatening to kill her if she does it. And he says, it's a good thing it's not up to her then, and unzips his pants.
Gross.
When he pulls out his penis, I try to turn my head the other way, but his grip on my neck forces me to watch every single detail. He's big and hard, and I don't even want to think about what made him so hard.
You, baby girl. Your fear.
He tells her to open up as he presses his dick to her lips, but she tries to resist even though he's fully in control with his hands gripping her hair.
I can always use your ass and cunt in that order, so unless you're willing to soak my dick with your blood and lick it clean, I suggest you open your mouth. He hits me across the lips with his dick and I have no choice but to loosen my jaw.
That's like where, no.
No. He says, bop, bop, open up.
Knock,
he
knock.
He just like molly walks her across the face.
Who's there? My penis.
She opens her mouth, trying not to vomit as he slides his dick in, and then she feels anger. She's like, I'm a king. My family is too powerful for me to be putting up with this shit. So her family, they're the kings, and they're very wealthy and powerful in this part of England, I guess.
Despite the fear that paralyzes my limbs, my gaze clashes with his as I bite down on his dick, hard, like, with everything in me. I bite with enough force that I think I'll cut his penis off and swallow the tip. The only reaction that comes out of the stranger is a grunt. And he's getting harder. I can feel him growing in my mouth worse than earlier.
Oh, he's a freak.
Oh, he kinky, kinky.
She says, yeah, bite it off. He's like one of those weird people on Craigslist that like pays people to come over and chop his dick off.
Oh my God.
Wild. She's forced to release him when he grabs her hair hard enough to rip it out of her scalp and bends her body backwards so she's looking up at him while still keeping his hard dick in her mouth. So he like cranks her entire spine backwards.
Use your teeth again and I'll switch to your ass. I'll tear through your tight hole and use your blood as lube while your head hangs over the edge. There's a strain in his voice as he pushes more of his dick inside my mouth. Now fucking suck. I'm speechless.
When Charlotte and I were like reading this, and this is like how it started, we were like, what the fuck are we reading? Like, oh, yeah. Wow. Oh my God.
What? There is a plot. Don't worry. There's a plot.
Oh, yeah.
This was, weirdly enough, the part that I was into, where I was like, okay, this book is pretty good. But then once you find out that he's 19, I was like, done. Immediately done. Fair. But if this was a 40-year-old man, hot, you know?
He's in med school. He has ambitions.
A yeah. man with some years on him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's not fine.
Not at all.
But I'll read about it. She finally obeys him, but she doesn't know what to do because she's never sucked a dick before. So she's kind of just like licking it like a lollipop.
Oh.
And he's like, you've obviously never sucked a dick before, so hollow your cheeks out and suck. She does as she's told, and he starts to breathe heavily, telling her, that's it, now use her tongue. After a while, he starts to just face fuck her, saying that her attempt at sucking a dick is cute, but he's gonna show her how it's done. And she's like gagging and choking and convinced she's about to die with a dick down her throat.
Valid. She's like, need air.
He pulls out and lets her get half a breath in before he's shoving back in again, and drool and pre-cum are dripping down her chin, and she's hoping this is over soon. Sounds wildly unpleasant.
Yeah. Been there.
Been on a wheel.
I'm lightheaded, my fingers throbbing and my legs shaking. I refuse to think about what's happening between them. I'm just not that fucked in the head. Right when I think he'll never finish, a salty taste explodes in my mouth. My knee-jerk reaction is to spit it all out in his face, so I try to do just that. The moment he slides his dick out of my mouth, I sputter the cum all over his designer shoes. Get him.
Slay, queen.
He grabs her face and starts thrusting his fingers in and out of her mouth before taking a picture. That's where you get appalled?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just picturing him being like... And he takes a picture of her being gagged and then uses the same hand to swipe her hair behind her ear. His spitty, cummy hand. He just, like, puts it in her hair.
Ew.
He pulls her away from the edge of the cliff and says, "Thank you for being such a good sport, Glendon," and walks away. And she's sitting there stunned, wondering how the fuck he knows her name. She's driving home crying and contemplating driving her car over the same cliff Devlin did, but puts the thought out of her head. Then she thinks about going to the police to report what just happened to her, but her family is so high profile, she doesn't want to put them through that with the media. That would absolutely eat that shit up. She gets to her house and immediately goes down to the basement where her dad built her an art studio. Her mom is a famous painter, and her older twin brothers are also extremely talented artists. And she views herself as the least talented artist in the family, but it's still her passion. So she's just a little artist girly from an artist family.
I bet you're great, Glendon.
Yeah. I just picture Not Another Teen Movie, where she's drawing, like, the stick figure. She's like, "It's my mom." And he's like, "You have her eyes, but it's a stick figure." She starts to paint using black and red and just blacks out, getting lost in the emotions of her assault when her brother Bran walks in. And he's the kinder of the two boys. So she has Brandon and Landon are her twin brothers, which also stupid. But Landon's kind of like a sociopath. And Brandon's, like, the sweet boy.
Okay.
Tuck that away for later.
Hmm.
And Bran looks at the painting and tells her it's incredible, but asks what's wrong because her painting is clearly a reflection of some inner turmoil. She says it's nothing that she wants to talk about, and he's like, "Well, let me go get Mom. She's gonna want to see this. It's amazing." And Glendon's like, "No, absolutely not," because she knows her mom would take one look at this abstract masterpiece and know exactly what happened. He asks if this is about Devlin, and she says no, and he holds her and tells her she needs to start letting people in before there's nobody left when she needs them, and she says she knows. Eventually, he leaves and she falls to the floor and cries. The next morning, she scrubs every part of her body that crazy guy touched and gets ready to head back to school because break is over. She's having breakfast with her parents and her brothers when she looks down at her phone and sees a text from an unknown number that says, "Maybe you should have died with Devlin, huh? After all, that was the plan, wasn't it?"
Wow. That's fucked up.
2 days pass, and she finally gets back to campus at the prestigious Royal Elite University on Brighton Island.
R-E-U.
It's divided into two schools, hers, which is the British side, and then there's the second campus for the American King's University. The students at REU are told to stay away from the King's U kids, and they're all new money and considered sketchy. And it says that, like, most of the kids have ties to, is it the Russian mafia their parents have ties to? Yeah. She's with her friends, Cecilia and Ava, when they're approached by a cute young girl who asks them where the School of Art is. She's American, so Glendon is like, "Are you lost? This isn't the King's U." And she's like, "Yeah, but they don't have a ballet school, so I'm here. My name is Annika Volkov, but you can call me Annie." Ava introduces herself as a cellist, and Cecily says she's a psychology major. And Glendon goes last and says she's a studio art student. And Annie's like, "I feel like we're all going to be friends." And Ava's like, "Your clothes are hella cute, so I think you're right." And they offer to show her around.
"You're not dressed ugly, sure."
As they're walking around, two guys named Remington and Creighton come up to them. And Creighton is Glendon's cousin, and they're both fancy, fancy boys. They both annoyed the shit out of me. I don't know if they get more likable in the sequels, but I was like, Creighton, boo.
I didn't like Remy, like, at all. What a name, also.
Creighton.
Sounds like a supplement you'd take or something.
Like creatine. There's some tension between Cecily and Remy about him leaving her on red, which I'm sure comes up in the next books. They get in a little argument that Glendon is amused by when she sees a flash of black in her peripheral, but when she turns to look, it's gone and she feels like someone is watching her. She falls behind her group of friends and they walk away without her, and then a hand slams over her mouth, dragging her back until she hits a wall, and a voice says, "You sure are hard to be found alone, Glendon." She starts to have a panic attack as she looks into her attacker's eyes as he traps her against the wall. wall. He kisses her cheek before telling her he's going to remove his hand, and if she makes a sound, there will be unpleasant consequences. She nods and he lets her mouth go, but still has her pinned against the building. And she says she hopes he likes prison, and he's like, bullshit, you didn't report anything. But she's like, you assaulted me. And he tells her he accepted a blowjob that she offered in return for him saving her life. And she's like, you really don't think you did anything wrong, do you? And he says, no, I literally saved your life. How about some gratitude? And she asks if she should get on her knees again or something.
He's like literally living in like a land of like Delulu, because that was not willing.
He's gaslighting her so hard.
He's like, no, you literally said, do you want me to suck your dick? You said that.
You literally put your lips on my cock, so that's willing. Okay.
You unzipped my pants. Do you remember? You don't remember?
Preferably. His thumb caresses my bottom lip and my breath hitches when his voice rumbles. I liked these lips. What they lack in experience, they make up for with pure enthusiasm. There's something about the nervous energy of the first time and your innocence that made it quite memorable. I bet it'll feel more euphoric when I tear through your cunt and make you bounce off my cock. My mouth falls open, completely and utterly lost for words. The stranger uses the chance to press his thumb against my bottom lip so hard that I think he's trying to glue it to my chin. I keep imagining the expressions you'll make when I throw you down and shove my cock deep inside your cunt. But it'll be hard to choose between it and your mouth.
This is a teenage boy.
Reminder. See, you have to stop saying that because I just forgot about it in my head. In my mind, he's 30.
Cool if he was 30, but he's not.
I will say, though, that was kind of sexy.
You know what? He's in college, though.
Yeah, why'd they even have to say an age?
Yeah, he's in college.
He's 19.
He's in college.
He skipped a grade.
Damn it.
He's smart and mature.
He's mature for his age.
Ew.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't like that.
She asks, why her? Why is he doing this to her when he could obviously have anybody he wants? And he's like, oh, so you think I'm hot?
Oh, of course.
And he says he's not interested in anybody but her right now. And she asks him why, but he doesn't have an answer. She says she'd never be interested in him ever. And he's like, never say never, baby.
He's like, oh, I bet you will be.
No means try harder.
Persistence breaks down resistance.
Ew. God.
He says maybe they have more in common than she thinks. And when she asks what that even means, he says she's a smart girl. She'll figure it out. He says he wants to start fresh with her. And she says, fuck you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I would never be able to forget that or just roll right past it.
Yeah. No. He lets her go and tells her to be good. He'll be seeing her around and starts to walk away when Glendon hears Annie, the girl from before, go, kill. And the guy is gone. And Glendon goes up to Annie and is like, why did you say kill? And that's when we learn that the attacker's name is Killian Carson. He's a fourth-year med student, even though he's only 19, and he's like the god of King's University, the American college.
Oh, Killian, huh?
Yeah, and they call him Kill or Killer. Very fitting. Now Glendon is like, what the fuck? Because the only person she knew from King's University was Devlin, so what does this guy want with her? We learn a little bit about some underground clubs at the school, and at King's University, there's the Rivals, the Serpents, and the Heathens. This just reminded me of Riverdale, which is another one of those shows where it's like high school kids doing very un-high school things. The Serpents and the Heathens have ties with the mafia. REU has the Elites, and her brother Landon is the leader. Then it clicks for Ava, and she's like, oh my god, your brother is Jeremy Volkov, the leader of the Heathens. He's rumored to have tied rocks to some guy who pissed him off and threw him to the bottom of the ocean. These are all teenagers.
I have also done that when I was 18, you know.
I remember the first time I gave someone cement shoes. And Annie's like, yeah, but he's not really as bad as people think he is. And asks if they hate her now. And Ava's just like, nah, you're cool. Annie looks at Glendon and tells her that her brother has explicitly warned her about Killian being dangerous. Whatever people think about Jeremy, Killian is like 10 times worse. And I feel like Glendon probably already knows that a little bit.
Yeah, I believe that.
Glendon's phone vibrates, and it's the unknown number again texting her to be careful. She might accidentally become the next target.
Spooky! Oh, ooh. Wow. I would shit my pants.
The book switches to Killian's point of view, and we get a little background on his childhood. And he's always been a psychopathic serial killer. He hasn't killed anybody yet, but like, in his brain, he's a serial killer.
I was going to say, from the ripe age of 5.
Well, at 7, he cut up mice just to see what their insides looked like, and his mom freaked out. Like, he's like, Mommy, look what I did. And she's like, oh my God.
I would 100% get my child into therapy.
Yeah. Well, he got diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder and as a narcissist, which is terrifying. He's learned to mask his dark desires to make everyone around him happy, and currently he's at a party being held at his mansion, and he's annoyed by everything going on around him. His cousin Nikolai comes up being all annoying and boisterous, and Killian seriously considers murdering him, but thinks better of it because it would make his mom sad.
Oh, good on you. Good job.
Killian and his goody two-shoes brother Garrett about some kids talking to the serpents about an initiation for the heathens a few weeks back, and start talking strategy about how to get revenge because they're like mortal enemies. And everything they do is secret, and they don't want the other club to find out. The parents of most of the heathens and serpents have ties to the Russian Bravta, but they're still rivals for power, so they don't like each other. Which didn't make sense to me, but I don't know. I'm not in a secret college society, so.
I think it's because, like, one's, like, the West and one's the East Coast, so they're, like, against each other.
Mortal enemies.
Some thirsty-ass girl comes crawling up to Killian, and he grabs her by the hair and shoves her face into his crotch, but looking at her repulses him. He says she looks like the girl from The Ring, so he pushes her back and puts his cigarette out on her Gucci bag.
Ugh, this guy's a dick.
Because she has, like, black hair that, like, covers her face, and she's, like, crawling towards him, and he's like, ah, Samara.
Scary.
He starts thinking about how the only mouth he wants to fill his cum with is Glendon's, and he gets hard just thinking about how she spat cum all over his shoes like it was too repulsive to swallow. He goes upstairs to his room when he can take no more of the socializing and looks through his old photographs of bloody mice and his brother's old childhood injuries. He just has like a shoebox filled with pictures of nasty shit.
He's just like, oh, my brother's old broken arm. Good times, good times.
He pulls out the photo of Glendon with tears and cum and snot running down her face and thinks about how she made him cum harder than he ever has before, but he doesn't understand why. He started watching her to investigate Devlin's death, but now it's turning into something else entirely. Glendon and the girls are at some underground college fighting ring where the heathens, serpents, and elites beat each other up regularly, and Creighton is fighting tonight. And apparently none of the school staff cares about this.
Oh, it's like a little fight club.
Little kitty fight club. And the teachers are like, yeah, beat his ass.
We got money on you.
Annie is talking about how she wants to leave because she shouldn't be here when her brother Jeremy walks up with none other than Killian, and Glendon is frozen in fear. Jeremy is like, Annie, I told you you aren't to come to these things, and she apologizes and agrees to leave. He says he'll walk her out, and Cecily and Ava are like, what the actual fuck, and follow them because they think Jeremy is being a misogynistic pig, and they leave Glendon alone with Killian.
Oh, no.
She tries to leave, but he grabs her by the arm. And when she starts to struggle against him, he says her fight is cute. And he wonders how she'll fight him when he stuffs his cock inside of her.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, just the cute things he says.
I know. He has to remind her every single time he sees her. He's like, I want to put my dick in your puss. And I will,
whether you want me to or not. She tells him that she's not interested and threatens to stab him if he tries. And he's like, not worried about that. But don't you want to hear my plan for how I'm going to get you to put your mouth around my cock again? And she's like, if you want me to bite your dick off, for sure, tell me. And he asks her to go for a ride with him. And she asks him if he's insane and says she's not going anywhere with him. He says he can simply take her and make her vanish without a trace if she doesn't go willingly. But if she does, he promises to return her safely.
She's like, are you crazy? Like, you really want me to get in a car with you when you just dangled me over a cliff?
And he's like, well, I could just pick you up and carry you, not bring you back.
He's like, you want to die? Because I can do that too. But the fact that he's like, do you want to go for a ride with me? Why would you even ask? Why?
You know she does not.
He's like, hey, you want to go? You want to go on a little date?
Jenna, you need help.
I think it's so much.
Seek help, Jenna.
I love it.
She says she doesn't trust him at all, so no thanks. And he's like, what can I do to make you trust me? How about I go win a fight for you? And she's like, against my cousin? Yeah, no thanks. He says, fine, I'll lose for you then. And before she can answer him, he's walking into the middle of the ring. She walks to the outskirts of the crowd and calls her therapist, Dr. Farrell, because she feels like she's on the verge of an episode.
I mean, yeah. She should have called him, like, on the way home from the cliff. Like, I would have been like...
Yeah.
Now she's at a fight and she's like, doctor!
You should have called him 3 chapters ago. He asks her what's triggering her, and she doesn't want to go into detail. And he asks if this is about Devlin, and she says, yes and no, and tells him about the texts that she's been getting. He asks if she feels threatened, and she says, strangely, not really, and promises to report them to the authorities if it escalates. How are those not threatening? The text was like, you should have died with Devlin. And she's like, cute.
One literally said, you'll be the next victim.
Yeah.
I know. She's in a state of delulu, too.
She's like, oh my god, he's flirting. He's so sweet.
She thanks him and heads back to watch the fight, but Killian isn't in the ring with Creighton. It's some other guy who runs in the same circle. Ava walks up and sits next to her and says Cecily is hanging back with Annie in her dorm where Jeremy has sequestered her. Ava sees who's in the ring and is like, oh my god, that's Nikolai Sokolov. Everyone thinks he chopped up all those bodies they found in the ocean. Another teenage boy. Chop, chop, chopping up bodies.
The Russian mafia, baby.
Little hooligans. The fight's about to start when a shadow appears behind Nikolai and taps his shoulder and switches out with him. Glendon mentally kicks herself for admiring how perfectly sculpted his body is, but she knows no matter how beautiful he is on the outside, he's a monster on the inside. And Ava's like, oh fuck, that guy almost killed someone in the ring last year, and Glendon suggests getting Creighton out of there, and Ava says there's no way Creighton will back down. The fight starts with a punch from Killian that has blood streaming down Creighton's face, and then they just start going at it. Glendon shouts her cousin's name, and Killian looks at her, cocking his head. His eyes fill with anger, and he just starts pummeling Creighton's face into a pulp. The crowd goes wild, and Glendon doesn't know what to do, so she shouts Killian's name. He looks up at her, which gives Creighton the chance to push Killian off, and Creighton starts to beat the shit out of him. And Killian isn't even attempting to defend himself anymore. And it's so brutal, some of the crowd looks like they're about to vomit, and finally Killian taps out, and everyone is stunned. Creighton is announced as the winner, and Glendon bolts as Killian walks out of the ring. She's out in the parking lot trying to figure out how to get home when an Aston Martin pulls up. The door opens and Killian says, last I checked, we had a ride to go on. She says no, but he threatens to go back inside and finish off her cousin, so she relents and gets in the car. He speeds off down the road and she tells him she still doesn't trust him. He did assault her after all, and he's like, no, I saved you.
Oh my god.
He reaches over and grabs her thigh and she says no, but he says the word no doesn't scare him. And besides, sometimes no means yes.
Oh, sir. My Delulu King. I can't.
And she tells him that this time, no definitely means no. And he says just because he doesn't feel emotions doesn't mean he doesn't recognize them. And he senses fear mixed with something else as his hand grazes under the hem of her skirt and says he can feel how wet she is for him as he brushes against her panties. She tells him not to touch her, but he doesn't listen. Because of course he doesn't.
Now that's just rude.
He is rude. He's a very rude person.
I just wanted to say, though, for him, like, forfeiting the fight, like, if he wanted to, he would, you know, like, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to and he will. And that goes for everything in his life. He wants that pussy. He will get that pussy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He wanted to. He would.
And he did.
Ooh. Yeah. It flipped that around.
Yeah. In a bad way.
Jenna's like, right, guys? Right?
If he wanted to, he would. Right?
Do you see what
Don't you agree?
You can't entice a predator with prey and ask him to go hungry. His fingers glide against my folds, the weight of his hand forcing my thighs apart despite my attempts to close them. I bet you were also wet when you were choking on my cock with your life hanging on the edge. Did your little cunt throb and demand to be touched too? I bet it was getting all drenched and achy.
Ew. Achy. Sir.
Drenched and achy.
I bet it was.
I loved your lips with my cock wrapped around them and cum coating them, but maybe I should have gone for your pussy too. He reaches a finger beneath my underwear and thrusts it deep inside. I bet these lips would look even better with my cock tearing into them. Every time he mentions like fucking her or something, he says, I'm gonna tear into your pussy. I'm gonna tear it. I'm gonna rip it in half.
Not the tear.
She's filled with both shame and arousal and tells him this isn't the way to get her to trust him. And he's like, you'll never trust me and you already hate me, so just let it happen.
Oh, okay.
The mental gymnastics of this man.
Honestly, this this would fuck me up too, I feel like. Yeah. I'd be like, ooh, I guess you're right. I don't know.
See, it's working. It's working. He continues pumping his fingers until an orgasm builds and he says he can feel her clenching around him and is like, do you actually want me to stop? And she tells him just to let her go. His hands stop moving, but he's still inside of her and her body starts to grind on him without her even thinking about it. He smirks and starts pumping again, using his thumb to stroke her clit, telling her she's a slut for his fingers.
Dirty little slut.
She comes against her will and she's too exhausted to hate herself in this moment. He removes his fingers and stares at the arousal coating them and rubs them together.
Said, look at this. Look what I got from ya. He slides the first finger into his mouth and makes a show of licking it clean before proceeding with the other one. His eyes never leave mine through the whole process, and I should be worried about us crashing into something or falling to our deaths. But I can't seem to think of that right now. Either the orgasm hasn't really finished or I'm sick in the head because my mouth goes dry and my thighs tremble. After one last dart of his tongue around his fingers, he pops them out. Tell me, Glendon, was I just touching your virgin cunt?
Yes, you were. His dick is rock hard and he doesn't quite understand why, because he doesn't get pleasure from giving pleasure. But her orgasm really did something for him. He wasn't even going to allow her to orgasm. His plan was to edge her and leave her miserable, but he just couldn't stop himself.
What a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a giver. What a gentleman.
But then something interesting happened. I felt her hymen with my fingers. I'm pretty sure I don't give a fuck about virgins. They're a hassle, a nuisance, and usually not a good fuck. So I have to get laid before and after to get my dose of physical stimuli.
Okay, what are you, sir?
So why the fuck is my vision filled with the image of the blood I'll smear all over Glendon's thighs when I tear into her cunt? There it is.
He's gonna tear into it. She tries to tell him she doesn't know what he's talking about, but he's consumed by the thought of seeing her bleed. He snaps Jesus. Himself out of it, and he's like, girl, you're a virgin. And she's like, okay, so what?
He's like, Bill, you've never fucked, and I know it. I'm curious. Why have you remained a virgin until now? She stares out the window, huffing. None of your business. What did I say about taking the high road? Do I need to deflower you on the road like an animal before or after you answer my question? Maybe while you scream and cry and bleed? Yeah, maybe after that.
She's like, why me? Why are you so insistent on haunting me? Why won't you leave me alone?
They're not the ones I think about. All the ways I'll stuff them with my cock. Watch them writhe beneath me, then fill them up with my cum. You are. What did I just read?
I think he's talking about, like, he doesn't want anybody else. Okay. He just wants to do that stuff to her.
He just wants to fill her with his cum.
Oh, sweet.
He says he knows she wants him, even though she denies it. And then she looks around and is like, where did you take me? He tells her this is the part of the island where they bury the bodies. And when she looks both shocked and curious, he's like, I'm just kidding. But why are you a virgin?
He's like, I need an answer. I will not go to sleep.
She tells him she just hasn't met anybody who she wanted to have sex with, and it certainly will not be him. He tells her to get out of the car so he can show her why they came here, and she's like, so you can kill me? No, thank you. And he says that if he wanted to kill her, he would have done it earlier, and then tells her nobody will be touching her until she covers his cock with her blood. He drags her out of the car, and eventually she just follows him as he walks. She looks around and sees she's in a tree-covered beach filled with fireflies, and she's like, wow, this is beautiful. He tells her this is where he comes when he wants to be alone, and she's the first person he's ever brought here. They sit down, and she's like, I'm not fucking you, and he says he promises he will not try and fuck her tonight. She compares talking to him like talking to an evil robot, and he's like, I'm not evil. I'm not black or white. I'm gray. I'm colorless. And she's like, no, I definitely paint you as morally black. Same. Same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He looks up at her and smiles. He likes talking to her, but he doesn't know why, because he hates talking to people. He tells himself he wants to own her, but doesn't really know what that means, and assumes it must be like owning a pet while still wanting to see what the inside of them looks like.
He needs help.
He's just curious.
He's just curious. He's a curious guy. He drives her back to her dorm, And when he returns to his mansion, Nikolai is yelling at him about throwing the fight against Creighton. But Killian doesn't care, and they start talking about the King family. Nikolai pulls up a photo of Landon, Brandon, and Glendon with their parents and says that he'd totally fuck Brandon and Glendon if they aren't weirded out by it. And Killian pelts his lighter at Nikolai's head and walks upstairs to his room. He pulls out his phone and looks at a photo he took of Glendon with the fireflies tonight and thinks about how much Devlin loved her. He'd cried and pleaded for her, but he still didn't fuck her. Glendon friend-zoned him, and Killian is determined to succeed where Devlin failed.
Oh.
When Glendon walks into the apartment she shares with the girls, Ava and Cecily ask where she's been, but she dodges the question. Creighton, Remington, and Brandon walk in to celebrate the fight, and Creighton is like, Glendon, why was Killian staring at you from the ring? And she tells him she doesn't even know who that is.
Who's Killian?
You yelled his name. She's like, I don't know.
I just heard it, and I really like the name.
They all eat fish and chips and hang out. Very British. Annie walks in and all the guys start swooning over the new American girl. And she's like, whoa, what are you eating? Can I have some? And goes to grab a piece from Creighton, but he flips out and pins her over the couch and is like, don't touch my food. And she's like, okay, weird.
Yeah.
They're all crazy. Glendon's phone vibrates and it's the unknown number asking her what she's doing. And she doesn't respond, so she gets another text.
Don't tell me you're sleeping, though of course you would be after having that orgasm. I'm the one who's left with a cock so hard I keep fantasizing about how you'll bounce on it.
Oh.
Bold of you to assume that she would be okay being on top.
What if she's a pillow princess?
Yeah.
She texts back asking, how the hell did you get my number? And he's like, it's a lot easier than you think to find, but the only issue at hand is my unsatisfied cock. And she's like, not interested. And then he writes back again.
Your little cunt would argue otherwise. I can still feel it clenching against my fingers with the desperation of a nymph. Also, I still have your taste on them. Haven't washed my hands yet. I think I'll use them to rub one out in your honor while I imagine your body writhing beneath me as your blood coats my dick.
He's a freak.
What a text message to send someone.
Yeah.
God.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
He asks if she'd fuck him if he came over right now, and she says absolutely not. So he texts her back and says, sweet dreams, winky face.
Cute.
She wakes in the middle of the night to a large figure on top of her with a hand over her mouth so she can't scream. Oh, he pulls down her panties as he grazes her pussy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He said, no, tonight, baby. I knew you'd be soaking wet, baby. Were you fantasizing about how I'd come through the window and deflower this tight little cunt? No, I wasn't.
I was sleeping.
I was in REM. REM.
That was on my second cycle, you bitch.
You fucked it all up.
She shakes her head, utterly ashamed that she's so turned on by this man right now. Call your therapist. Call him up right now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to need the number two, so I guess.
Honestly.
You're messing up my fingers and you still dare to lie to me? His voice darkens, becoming one with the night. Maybe you'll stop the lies when I'm pounding this cunt. You won't have the chance to lie when your blood is smeared all over my cock. You might be screaming though, but guess what? No one will hear you. He positions himself between my legs and chuckles. The sound low and absolutely terrifying. Look at you dripping onto the mattress at the promise of being deflowered like a dirty little whore instead of an innocent virgin. Deep down, you like this, don't you? You want to be forced to lose control. That way you'd be comforted by the fact that you didn't agree to this. It's your mind's way of assuming you're not the twisted one who actually fantasizes about this. It's fine though. I'll be your villain, baby.
Okay.
It's rape, sir. That is rape.
That, yeah, 100%. She's shocked because how does he know about her deepest, darkest fantasies? And then he's like, you're grinding on my fingers. You're so horny for me. And she looks down and realizes that she totally is. She closes her eyes and hears murmurs, and she realizes that she's dreaming, and everyone is standing over her wondering if she's okay.
Oh.
She pretends to be asleep still, and Cecily is telling Bran to keep it down because she barely sleeps lately and she's really worried. Bran asks if Cecily is hiding it from her still, and she says yes, she won't find that filth. And I just have question mark, question mark, question mark. What?
What?
What's going on?
I want to know.
And Glendon is like, what the fuck? She wakes up the next morning with soaked panties, not knowing what was real and what was a dream. Damn.
I would have shot up in bed immediately if I heard them say that and been like, excuse me. What?
She doesn't. She's just like,
No.
Me.
Surprise, bitches. I'm not asleep. Give me the tea.
She gets to lunch with the girlies, and Annie starts talking about the heathen's initiation party coming up. It's invite only, and it gets extremely violent. She mentions someone from last year that didn't make the cut and wound up driving his car off a cliff. Devlin.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Glendon starts crying, and Annie's like, oh shit, I'm sorry, I didn't know you guys were friends. And Killian walks up behind her, and she's like, why are you here? And he says he's here to collect Annika because she's staying at the mansion tonight per her brother's request. Glendon tells him he's a psycho and offers to refer him to her shrink. And he surprises her, and he says, yeah, give me their number. I want to see the face of the person you tell your deepest, darkest secrets to. He warns her not to go wandering around at night and leaves with Annie. She looks down at her phone and sees an invite for the initiation ceremony. The next night, she takes a deep breath and heads for the King's U campus. At the gate, there are two men wearing suits and creepy bunny masks covered in blood, checking everyone's phone and invites. Only 100 people were invited, and Glendon was lucky number 69. She walks into the mansion after being handed a mask and a bracelet. Everyone else is wearing masks too, and five men walk out of the upper doors wearing different color purge-style masks. Terrifying.
Oh my god, yep.
She figures it's Killian, Jeremy, Nikolai, and Gareth, but doesn't know who the fifth person could be. An announcement comes from the speaker saying anybody not willing to hand their lives over to the heathens is to leave now. And a few people take the opportunity and book it. They announce the game, Hunter and Prey. They are to be hunted by the founders, and whoever makes it to the edge of the property will become a heathen. Physical violence can and will happen, and is allowed from both sides. Anyone touched by a founder's weapon is out. No taking a life on purpose, but accidents do happen. They have a 10-minute head start, and the games begin. Glendon doesn't even think before she starts to run.
I thought it was like it was like a party, and she was gonna go and watch it. I didn't know if she had to participate.
I don't think she did either.
Terrifying. Absolutely.
They gave them that little time frame. They were like, if you don't want to do this, this is your only chance. But she was like, no, I'm a bad bitch. I have to figure out what's going on.
I would have said, I'm out. Well, because she's like, Devlin died during last year's initiation. So I'm going to go and I'm going to figure out what happened.
Oh, girl.
Coral, just let it go.
Good luck.
The guys are chomping at the bit to start hunting, and Killian's weapon of choice is a bat. He doesn't even wait for the 10 minutes to be up before he walks out after his prey. He goes after a group that decided to form a tribe and hits one of them with his bat, eliminating him. One of the others throws a rock, hitting him right in the forehead, but he just thinks it's funny. And he has, like, blood dripping down his face, and he's like, hehe, nice.
Yeah, bro, you got me.
He walks up to them and hits all five of them with his bat. Someone runs past him, and he just throws the bat at them, but they use an unconscious body as a human shield and escape. He goes after them, thrilled that someone is actually giving him a challenge. And then a real arrow whizzes past his head, not one of the fake ones his brother is supposed to be using. And he's like, I think my brother might be trying to kill me right now. They don't really get along very well. They have a weird relationship.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So he grabs the arrow and snaps the tip off to investigate it later. He searches for the person who evaded him, and he sees some tracks in the dirt that are clearly a decoy. And he's like, whoever this is, they're smart, and I like it.
Who could it be? I don't know.
Glendon is running from Killian and manages to run far enough ahead to climb up a tree. She waits for a few minutes, and when she feels like the coast is clear, she starts to climb down, but then she sees a red purge mask staring up at her, and she screams. He throws his bat, breaking the branch she's hanging onto, and she falls into his arms. Looking down at her, he's like, I knew it was you the second I looked up and saw those white panties you're wearing. I thought I told you to stay put tonight. But she's like, I got an invitation. And he's like, yeah, but you didn't have to come. Maybe you just got curious and you wanted to be hunted like prey and ravaged in the most barbaric way.
I frantically shake my head, refusing to come to terms with the chills that cover my body or the tightening between my legs that's been intensifying with each of his words. Are you telling me that if I rip your shorts and touch your
your cunt. I won't find it soaking wet like when I came through your window last night.
Wait!
So it was real.
So confused.
So it wasn't a dream. It really happened.
Then how did she hear?
Both were real.
Yeah.
She like fell asleep, which is crazy because I feel like if I woke up, I would be so alarmed. I would jolt out of my sleep.
I would be up for the day. I feel like I would be up.
He sets her down on the ground and is like, you were practically riding my hand last night, you horny little rat. He didn't say horny little rat.
Oh, I was like, oh my God.
And she's like, you're wrong, and looks down to see a tented bulge in his pants. He crowds her space and she asks if he'd stopped if she asked him to, and he says no and to stop acting like she doesn't want it. She begs him to stop all of this, but he says that begging is of little importance to him. She asks what is important and he says her and her virgin cunt. She gets him to agree not to fuck her right this very second and to give her a little bit more time. She says they should get to know each other at least, so he tells her he's becoming a doctor because he wants to see people's insides, and she's like, Jesus Christ.
What the fuck? She's like, maybe we shouldn't.
He tells her that he already knows her and lists off her favorite movie, band, color, ice cream, and then is like, you have an inferiority complex due to your mother and brothers, and you didn't really want to die that night at the cliff, and she's shook because it's all correct. She asks if she can get back to initiation, and he says no, the heathens aren't really her scene, but she owes him for being so nice to her just now, and rubs his erection along her stomach through their clothes. He pulls her top down to reveal her red bra, and he's like, ooh, did you wear my favorite color on purpose? Did you touch yourself in the mirror thinking about me?
She's like, no.
No. This was my only clean one.
He pulls down the other strap and glides his fingers against my bra until he finds the tips of my breasts. The tip?
Just the tip.
Look at these little nip. Look at these little nipples being all hard before I even touch them.
Ew.
Look at them. These little nipples.
Little nippies. His thumb and forefinger wrap around a nipple and twist. I shudder and clamp my lips against a moan as a zap of pleasure trickles down my stomach into my pulsing pussy. Your tits are gorgeous, baby, all creamy and pink. Not to mention, they fit perfectly in my hands. He cups them both, each in a strong palm, as if to prove a point. Mmm, so perky and beautiful. I want to torture them a little. Just a little.
Just a little bit.
Oh my God. Just the little nipples. I can't. I can't. Look at your little nipples.
I would just be like, oh.
Thank you.
That's them, my little nipples.
He starts pinching and twisting her nipples and then stroking them when she cries out, alternating between pain and pleasure.
I bet you're all soaking wet. He reaches into my shorts and I bite my lip as his hand meets my underwear. So fucking drenched, baby. Maybe I should acquaint your cunt with my cock after all. They obviously need the introduction.
Oh.
Hey there. Hey, nice to meet you. Hey, I am Glendon's pussy. Nice to meet you.
Come on in.
Stay a while.
Ring the doorbell first, please.
Oh, is the doorbell the clit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cute.
Just a little ding-dong.
She's like, I thought we agreed you'd give me time. And he says 15 minutes is time. But she says if he does this, she'll never trust him. And he says he won't fuck her tonight, but 69 is an awfully beautiful number, isn't it? He pushes her down on the ground and straddles her face and pulls his huge dick out. He tells her to open her mouth and put her lips on his cock.
The way that I, like, still would fall for it. Like, there's something wrong with me.
I don't want a man straddling my face, I don't think.
I slowly do, my heart hammering. He slides inside inch by inch, and I start licking. I'm still absolutely clueless on how to give a blowjob, but I'm supposed to be doing this, right? He pulls out, tisking. Don't just lick it like it's a popsicle. Killian shoves three of his fingers in my mouth and deep throats me, hooking against my tongue and swirling it. My legs jerk, and I swear I've never been as turned on in my life as I am right now. Goodness.
He tells her to be rough and fast. She won't hurt him and shoves his dick back into her mouth. She does as she's told and he thrusts into her mouth and tells her she's doing great. He rips off his mask and she's shocked to see his face is covered in blood and she can't help thinking that he looks like a beautiful monster.
He cups my jaw, then uses a finger to wipe across my bottom lip.
I love your mouth when it's stuffed with my cock. You're my perfect little cum hole, aren't you?
Cute.
Logically, I should be offended, but the exact opposite happens. My pussy clenches and I rub my legs together in both shock and embarrassment. This mouth belongs to me now, and you'll let me use it whenever I please, won't you? He tightens his hold on my jaw and forces me to nod. That's a yes, Killian. My mouth and my every hole are yours to use and fill up with cum.
Yes, Killian!
Sir, yes, sir.
His words alone almost make her cum, and her panties are soaked. He pivots around and pulls her shorts down and starts eating her out, and he tells her if she stops, he stops.
I muster up everything in me and suck as enthusiastically as I physically can. He peppers kisses on my folds, then sucks on them with the expertise of a wicked sex god. I'm not completely used to that when he licks all the way to my slit and then down again. He whispers against my most sensitive skin. Such a fast learner, my Glendon. Then he drives his tongue inside me and pinches my clit. I don't know if it's that or the way he called me his Glendon, but I come uncontrollably without any ounce of shame.
He comes down her throat and tells her to drink every last drop. If she misses one, they'll start all over. He pulls out his phone and uses his thumb to shove a stray streak of cum back into her mouth and takes a photo of her. They get up, and he helps her get dressed in an almost gentle way. She tells him she still doesn't want him. The only reason she's aroused by him is because of the fear and anxiety she's constantly in around him, and he's not her type. And he's like, oh, what is your type then? And she says, someone nice. And he's like, what? I'm hella nice. I said I'd give you time. I'm so nice. He's so nice.
Yeah, duh.
He says he's done with the hunt now, and they walk back to the mansion, where he's like, okay, you're mine now. And she starts to say she's not, but he stops her and tells her not to finish that sentence unless she wants to see him angry. Besides, they're about to go on their second date. He taps her with his bat and announces that number 69 is eliminated. The doors open, and a beautiful blonde woman runs out, screaming, killer! Glinda doesn't know why, but she feels like she's in a jealous rage, and the girl tries shoving her tongue into Killian's mouth, but he grabs her by the hair and tosses her aside. And the girl is like, I love when you're rough. Rawr. She says rawr. She's like, rawr. Yeah. Killian's like, what are you doing here, Cherry? And she says she made it through initiation and maybe he could fuck her to celebrate. And he can even choke her if he wants. Glendon is upset now and is like, I'm gonna go. But Killian grabs her elbow and tells Cherry he's already got someone else to fuck. Sorry. Through the door over there, there are plenty of dicks she can suck. Cherry is pissed and is like, this girl looks boring as fuck. Nobody can please you like I can. And Glendon goes to leave again, but Killian says if she leaves, he'll fuck Cherry. She says she doesn't give a fuck and storms away. On her way out, she runs into Gareth, Killian's brother, who warns her to stay away from him because Killian is dangerous. He's a criminal in the making, and eventually he'll escalate to the point of no return. She thinks to herself that Gareth has Killian all wrong and walks to her car, trying not to think about who he's probably fucking right now. She gets home and tosses and turns all night. She can't sleep, so she does a little Instagram stalking and finds Killian's account, which is apparently already following her, and he's liked all 500 of her posts in the last hour.
Oh, he's like, I miss you so much.
Just know I see you.
She looks at his profile and he has like 200,000 followers. And all of his posts are super cute and aesthetic, and she knows it's all fake. And she also notices he has a lot of pictures with his mom. She refreshes the page and sees the photo he took of her tonight with his fingers in her mouth. It's cropped, so she's still anonymous, but she's pissed. And the caption says, caught a little rabbit tonight and decided to keep it. She gets up and does a quick sketch of a man who basically looks the exact opposite of Killian and takes a photo of it, and she posts it with the caption, my type. And she immediately gets a text that says, like, fuck he is.
Oh, we love a petty girl. Mm-hmm. Petty Betty.
Killian spent the night alone and created thousands of fake accounts and reported Glendon's new post to get it taken down. So he's got the time.
Dedication.
It's like a sketch. It's not even a picture of a real person. But he's like,
he said, fuck you. My feelings are hurt.
If I had feelings, they would be hurt right now.
Yeah, true.
I am your type. He wakes up the next morning and goes to class. He gets a text from his mom that says that she loves him to Neptune and back, and he texts back that he has a test today and asks if she thinks he'll do well, and she says, of course, even if the world stops believing in him, she always will. He respects his mom for still loving him despite her knowing that he's a monster, and he's annoyed looking at his phone, though, because he has no text from Glendon, so after class, he makes his way to the other campus. He finds Glendon sitting at a fountain laughing with another guy, and he is fuming. Killian walks up and sits down, putting his arm around her and is like, hey, I'm Killian, Glendon's boyfriend. Who the fuck are you? And the guy's like, my name's Stuart. And he says, hey, Stuart, how are your parents? You should probably go check on them to make sure they're okay after naming their kid something so fucking stupid.
Oh, poor Stuart.
Stuart runs away and Glendon's like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm not your girlfriend. Why don't you go hang out with Cherry?
Look at you being adorably jealous. Were you upset that I tore through her cunt with my cock? Did you imagine me eating her pussy and making her choke on my cum like I did to you?
Did it hurt?
Are you sad?
He's hurt.
Glendon says, fuck you, and tries to stand up, but he pulls her back down and says they aren't done here. She says he already has a fuck toy, so leave her the fuck alone.
Cherry isn't my fuck toy. You are. If you play difficult again and say you don't care if I fuck her, I'll stuff her with my cock while you watch, and then I'll revoke my nice phase and deflower you on the spot. I'm not a patient person, Glendon, but I've been trying to conjure that trait for you. If you show no appreciation for my efforts, I'll just let my devil side take over.
He's trying.
I'm trying really hard.
Glendon's like, so you didn't fuck Cherry? And he says, no, do you want me to? And she doesn't answer. And he says, answer the question or he'll call Cherry right now. So she caves and says no, but not because she cares. Because if he's going to be harassing her, she won't be a side piece. And he's like, haha, okay. She reaches into her bag and pulls out a Sammy that she packed for herself. And Killian's like, no, 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 you are not eating junk. And pulls out a container he brought for her. And it's rice, shrimp salad, and eggs. And there are veggies in the shape of a creepy smiley face on the rice.
Cute.
She devours it and is like, whoa, this is really good. Your chef must have worked really hard on this. And he says, no, I made it myself.
Just for you.
She's shocked and kind of flattered, but is like, hey, delete that picture off your Instagram. And he says, no, but she needs to delete the my type photo. And she says, no, but he grabs her phone and does it himself. He goes to her contacts and sees that he's in her phone as psycho and laughs before taking a selfie and making it the contact photo. Glendon goes home and walks into the girls having a conversation on their deepest, darkest fantasies. They ask her to join in, and she's like, finding a nice guy, I guess. And Ava's like, you lying bitch. Last year you told me it was fighting and being forced to take it. And now she's thinking to herself that she must have accidentally manifested this whole situation.
Checks out.
She pulls Cecily aside and asks what they were talking about the other night when they thought she was sleeping, about the filth they hid from her. And Cecily looks guilty but pulls her phone out and shows her a photo of a canvas smeared with red paint that says, why are you still breathing, Glendon? And says it was left in front of their apartment right after Devlin died. Now Glendon doesn't know what she's gotten herself into. That night, Glendon and the girls go to a party at the Heathen's mansion, and it's absolutely popping, but Glendon spots Gareth in the crowd and decides to follow him to try and get some answers about Devlin since he died in the Heathen's initiation. She follows him to a dark hallway, and he spins around and is like, why are you following me? She says she wants to make a deal. She knows he hates his brother, and she'll ally with Gareth against Killian in exchange for access to records and camera footage of the night Devlin died. Gareth is like, how close were you to Devlin? And she says, closer than anyone. He asks if Devlin ever mentioned the Heathens, and she says no. And he tells her that she probably didn't know him at all then, but agrees to use Glendon against Killian before he lifts her chin with his finger and leans down to press a kiss against her lips. The second his lips are on hers, he's launched across the room by Killian.
Dun, dun, dun.
The tea.
So the scene unfolds in slow motion as Killian slams Gareth against the wall. She's seen him a monster, a sexy god, but she's never seen him this angry. The scariest part to her is that he's so, like, nonchalant. She can tell that he's just simmering with rage because his eyes that are normally blue are black. She said that his pupils are just, like, blown out and that he's, like, thirsting for blood.
Mm-mm-mm.
Gareth, on the other hand, is egging his brother on. He's, like, smiling wildly. He's like, well, is the almighty killer finally getting emotional? Like, do we have to FaceTime dad and give him the news? Since, like, he's a fucking psychopath and apparently is immune to emotions. The whole time Glenn is watching this and she's realizing that he's provoking him and saying things that are purposely trying to hurt his brother. Gareth is like, your girlfriend prefers me. And she steps in now and she's like, actually, I'm not his girlfriend and I don't prefer either of you. So let's just get this straight. As Gareth was saying that Glenn prefers him, he also said that she wanted to see what his lips tasted like. And that snapped something in Killian. He's like, if you touch her again, I will fucking kill you. I will hold mom's hand while she cries at your funeral. I'll even make sure that I become dad's golden boy. And I will make sure that he forgets that you ever exist.
Sociopath.
Glenn is like, holy shit, he is actually serious. He means every word that he's saying. And she's starting to get scared. So she just like takes baby steps back and then just starts like running away.
Yeah, as you should.
Yeah. She makes it around like one corner and then strong hands grab her. And he says, where do you think you're going, my little rabbit? And I think that's kind of like endearing. Like if Greg was like, grab me, and he was like, my little rabbit, I'd be like, hop, hop. Like, I don't know. I think it's a cute little pet name.
I do think it's cute, but not after what just happened.
He was fighting for her.
Yeah.
She tries fighting him off and getting him off of her. And he's like, oh, you want to fight? I could choke the living fuck out of you right here, right now. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, but that's her fantasy, baby.
I know. And he's like choking her out. She tries to shake her head, but she doesn't even know if it moves because he's choking her so bad. She's super lightheaded, but she's like, this is the good kind of lightheaded. And she's like, holy fuck, my pussy's so wet right now. Like,
girl.
First, she was trying to push him off of her. But as she's like coming to and realizing things, she's realizing that she's kind of just groping him and like feeling all around him and basically dry humping him.
I knew you were more than your looks suggested. You had this clean, innocent, and utterly pretty aura, but really you're nothing more than a dirty little whore, aren't you? All this fighting and running and fucking shenanigans were just a way to provoke me so I'd throw you down and fuck you on all fours like a fucking animal, or maybe so I'd shove you head first against the nearest surface like this wall and fill you up with my cum.
He wants to fill her with cum.
He does.
He's only said it like 10 times.
He wants to tear through her, rip her pussy in half.
She's wearing a red dress, and as you know, red is his favorite color.
Red dress.
And he's like, were you thinking of me when you picked this dress out, or was it for Gareth? And when she didn't answer him, he pinched her nipple really hard. And he was like, you always wanted the nice guy? Well, too bad. You got the fucking villain. The thought of his brother fingering his pussy makes him see red. So he pulls down her underwear and thrusts three fingers inside of her at the same time.
Jesus.
He said, what, Hyman? You don't have one now, baby girl.
And a choked sob tears from her throat, but it's not due to pain or discomfort. It's from relief.
Feel that? That's your cunt welcoming my fingers home. That's your cunt knowing who the fuck owns it, touches it, brings it pleasure. If someone dares to look at it, let alone contemplate touching it, they'll be an MIA statistic. Am I clear? A whimper rips from me and it's sick. I'm sick. If anyone even gets down on your pussy's level and looks at it, they're done.
Toast.
He does not let her come, though. He's edging her. He starts pulling down his boxers, and she's like, whoa, pause. What are you doing? He's like, what do you think I'm doing? I'm finishing what we started. She's like, hold on. Please, like, let's talk about this. And he says, no, I'm done talking about this. She's like, I'll scream. He says, by all means, go ahead. No one will hear you. If they do, we can fuck on their blood if you're not squeamish.
Oh.
She went with the whole classic, you said you were going to give me more time. And he's like, yeah, that was before you seduced my brother. Your lips were on his. And she said, well, Cherry's were on yours. He said that the jealousy turns him the fuck on, but that he didn't kiss Cherry, that she kissed him. And she tries pleading with him and even says, pretty, pretty please. And he almost backs down, but then his dick gets really hard. And he's like, damn, like, nice try. You almost got me. I'm so fucking proud of how cunning you are.
He said, you see this guy down here? Gotta take care of it.
He's like, I have to fuck you so that everyone knows that you're mine.
Okay, you guys aren't animals. They'll scent me on you and they'll know to stay away. Your blood is making a mess of the sheets, Killian groans. Do you see the welcoming ceremony your cunt is holding for me? I have no words.
She says that without words, he's basically telling her that she has no say in this, that if he wants to ruin her, he will. But instead of hurting her, he's choosing to fuck her.
I shake my head, but he lifts me up by his grip on my neck and makes me see the blotches of blood on the white covers. He makes me see the in and out of his cock that's covered with both blood and arousal as he rams into me. His intensity increases with each passing second, and so does the firm hold he has on my neck.
I knew red was my favorite color.
Ew.
Glynn is littered with hickeys all over her tits, hips, neck, stomach, like literally everywhere, and it's still not enough to satisfy his hunger. Early on, he knew that he needed more stimulation to dull the constant need for more. His dad noticed his tendencies and put him on high-pressure sports and took him out for hunting, and they were nearly to satisfy his inhumane need for euphoria. Sex was only a temporary solution. It never truly satisfied him. He even tried getting into hardcore BDSM, and that didn't really even do anything for him.
Jesus Christ.
And he said that he never chokes anyone with bare hands because even he doesn't trust his own strength or bloodlust. That even when he was fucking her, he contemplated choking her to death because she was falling apart on his cock, and the reason why he didn't kill her was because she touched him over and over and trusted him. She's lying passed out on the bed, like literally spread eagle, and his dick's getting hard again. And he's like, fuck, I want to fuck her again. He gently slides her leg off the side of the bed to clean her up, and he notices that she has some dried blood, so he starts licking the dry blood off of her leg and then starts eating her out.
Ew.
She starts waking up as he's eating her out, and she's like, oh my god. And he's like, you're finally awake, sunshine. I was getting bored. She's like, did you just go down on me while I was sleeping? And he's like, well, yeah.
Say thank you.
He's thinking to himself how he's already becoming so obsessed with her, how he wants to cut open one of her veins and see the inside of one of them, like he does with the postmortem patients. It sends like a queasy feeling in his stomach because he knows that if he does that, she'll lose her voice and everything that he likes about her, like her warmth, her temper, and even her irritating fight. But he doesn't want to see her dead, so he decided that he'll fight his demons so they'll abandon the urge to see inside of her.
Cute.
He needs to be in an institution.
Yeah. He's working on it. He's learning to fight his demons, right? The silence is so loud.
We're like, yeah. Okay, Jenna.
He rubs his dick against her, and he's like, I want to go another round. And she's like, no, like, seriously, I'm so sore. He grabs her butt cheek, and he's like, relax, like, I'm not going to fuck you.
Imagine if your partner had to say that to you. Relax, I'm not going to fuck you. Okay, good.
I'd be like, you're going to fuck me, aren't you?
You're going to do it.
But he said, because she said please, that he's not going to because she's in pain. And he's like, see, I can be nice.
Thank you for listening to my no this time.
And she says, so you're just telling me now that you don't want to fuck me? And he's like, no, I do, but I don't want to hurt you. And she's like, well, you did the night of the cliff. And he's like, I know you're not ready to admit it, but I felt something for you or I wouldn't have continued. And she's like, you're literally demented. There's no way that I felt desire in this circumstance. You're just making excuses. And he's like, no, I'm telling you my side of the story. And she's like, you're not even sorry? He's like, you know I don't feel that.
He's like, I have no feelings.
It's like, I will not apologize for something that we both enjoyed. And she's like, I did not enjoy it. And he says that her shoulders shake with how much she's trying to suppress her nature. Since they just had sex and he came inside of her, she's like, you didn't use a condom. And how do you know I'm on birth control? He's like, I work at the hospital where you got your IUD implanted. And then, oh, and I looked up your records. So I know that you have an IUD. I always wear condoms with everyone that I have had sex with. So I'm like clean from STDs. And she's like, have you ever heard of HIPAA? Like, you just like broke a HIPAA law.
And you want to be a doctor?
Right? She tells him that he has these moments where he can be slightly amicable, but they're often drowned out by his devil sides. And he says it's because she provokes it. She fell asleep on top of Killian. Like, it was the most natural position in the world. She was thinking to herself, who knew she could fall asleep so easily in the devil's arms? She's going down the hallway when she hears Jeremy's voice talking about border territories, the serpents, and she's getting a little curious. So she takes one more step forward and she trips over a person who's sleeping on the floor who happens to be Nikolai. He jumps up and gets in her face. And he's like, who the fuck do we have here? Nikolai gets close enough to Glynn where he reaches out to her face like he's about to cover his palm over her cheek. But before he can, something hits his head so hard and he falls to the ground. And it's Killian.
Comes out of nowhere.
Killian grabs her by the throat and he pushes her up against the railing and kisses her wildly and possessively. His other hand wraps around her hips and slams her against the front of his body. Once their intense makeout session is done, he pulls her to his side and then announces to all of his friends that she is his and therefore off limits. And he throws her over his shoulder like a damn caveman and carries her back up the stairs.
He says, you're not leaving. This is my property.
She finally gets a good head on her shoulder and she's like, Killian, wait, let's just go back back to sleep because he's like super worked up that she tried sneaking out, that Nikolai was in her face, that she was wearing like a little t-shirt because he ripped her dress. So they fall asleep. Glenn wakes up to Killian bringing her breakfast in bed. They're bickering back and forth, and she asks him if he was born this annoying or did it come with time. And he says a little bit of both, but my dad has the most annoying traits, so he probably got it from him. She basically was like, I'm assuming you have daddy issues then. And he's like, how did you gather that? She said that earlier he said that Gareth was daddy's golden boy, so that means that he isn't. And also said that he had the annoying traits, and he never posted a picture of the two of them on Instagram. He's like, what are you getting at with my relationship with my father? He told her that he doesn't have a relationship with his father. She's trying to see the bright side of the picture and just says most parents don't hate their children. And then he says the key word is just being most. And she fishes out her phone and sees all of the text messages and calls that she's received while she was gone. That consists of Ava, Cicely, Remy, Annika, Brandon, and the last text message was from Landon. And she like knows that she's in deep shit when she sees the text message from Landon because they try to stay out of each other's lives. And she walks up to her apartment. Ava immediately gets in her space and she's like, you left us last night. We barely slept. We were worried sick all while you were just getting dick.
Yep. If I was her friend, I'd be mad too.
She's like, wait, can someone tell me what's going on? She's like, how did you know that? They all know that she's kind of like a virgin.
Oh yeah, they know.
She's like, can someone tell me what's going on? And Cicely just says, check your Instagram.
Oh no.
So she pulls up Instagram and the first picture that shows up on her feed was posted an hour ago and it has over 100,000 likes and tens of thousands of comments. And it's Killian kissing her against the stairs. His hand is wrapped around her throat. The other's on her hip. His touch is so possessive that it goes without saying what type of relationship that they have. He puts in the caption, off limits, and then tagged her. And that's how all of her friends knew where she was.
I'd be mortified.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it wasn't like a psycho, creepy relationship, maybe I'd be like, oh my God, that's kind of cute. That's my man. But in this context, no.
Her brother, Landon, texts her and says, let's do it your way, little princess. Don't show your face and you're the motherfucker or I'll kill him.
Oh,
Killian's at school and he's so distracted today. He even has his favorite class, which is pathology. And they're in the morgue today, which is usually the highlight of his week, which is seeing inside dead people. And he even decides not to go. The stupid, dumb redhead Stella is trying to flirt with him. She like touches his shoulder and he's like, who gave you permission to touch me? She's like, sorry, I thought it was okay. And he's like, you thought wrong. And then walks away from her. Period, King.
Yeah, but he doesn't listen when anyone says that to him.
I know. It's because he's a narcissist, okay?
That is true. Yeah.
True.
So he's leaving class and he's walking to the parking lot and there's someone leaning against his car. They have like keys hovering over his car and it's none other than the King twins, Brandon and Landon.
Oh.
Brandon's just kind of standing there and Landon's the one that has the key. Landon tells him that if he doesn't stay away from his sister, that he will vandalize his one-of-a-kind car. Killian just egged him on and he's like, you saw how much she was into it. And Brandon was just like, that's not true. Glenn would never choose someone like you. You must have coerced her.
I mean, he sure did.
He's like, what do you mean someone like me? Like a fourth year med student, an heir to an empire, leader in one of the world's most prestigious colleges? Oh, and your sister's boyfriend?
Yikes.
Brandon, who's also Glenn's best friend, was like, you are not her boyfriend. And then Killian just smiles and then says, denial's the first stage. I'm sure they'll get into the acceptance stage eventually. He's so sassy.
That is a sassy boy.
Killian realizes that Landon is very much exactly like him. So Killian puts all of his focus on Brandon and he tells him that Glenn talks about him all the time and that he's her favorite brother and that she wishes that they all got together better and she hates being the bridge between the two of them. And Brandon is slowly falling for the manipulation. He tells him that he felt bad for Glenn when she said that she felt trapped between the two of them, which is why she prefers dinner at her grandfather's house instead of back home. All of these things Glenn never actually told him. He just gathered all of this information from her Instagram, that she had more pictures with her grandfather and her grandmother than with her parents, that she has more pictures with Bran than with Landon, that she has more pictures with her friends than with her brother. Like, he's just using all this just to manipulate him. And Landon can see straight through that and gets pissed, so he just starts keying Killian's car.
Good.
Brandon asks a very logical question as to how do I know you're not using my sister? And he's like, if I was using her, I would have just gotten bored with her the first 2 days and then let her go. He's like, that's not super reassuring. And he's like, I could have lied to you, but I chose not to. Glenn said that she likes my honesty. And that causes Brandon to smile.
Ugh.
He was just about to push a little bit further as a woman approaches. She's described as goth Barbie with a black dress, black boots, a bag, and ponytail with a fuck ton of ribbons that match her black dress. It's his cousin Mia, who's a year younger than him. Her steps come to a halt when she sees what Landon has done to the car, and she starts signing, like, in sign language. Why the fuck did this fucking tool ruin your car, and why is he still breathing? Landon is an absolute dickhead and calls her a mute. Brandon apologizes on his brother's behalf, and since Brandon was nice, she invites him over with them to eat, and Brandon surprisingly agrees. So before they go, Landon says that Killian has 7 days to cut ties with Glenn, or they'll do things his way.
I bet they're gonna have to do them his way.
Yeah.
I just know it.
You have a little inkling?
I do.
The next day, Glendon was basically the talk of the school due to their intense makeout session that was plastered on Instagram. During her little break in art class, she checks her phone and it's a text message from Killian. He tells her that she can run all she wants, but he'll just occupy himself with ... and then sends a picture of Brandon sitting across from him eating. And she's like, holy fuck, is he threatening him? Like, why is my brother sitting across and eating with him? So she gets up and immediately like runs out of the art room to go to the Heathen's mansion. As she enters, she hears a scream from upstairs. She pushes open the double door, and when she gets to the top of the stairs, it opens to a huge game room, and she finds Killian, Bran, and a girl all sitting together playing games, actually enjoying each other's company.
What the hell?
Glenn finally makes herself known, and she asks Bran if he's okay, and he's like, yeah, of course, like, why wouldn't I be okay? And then he introduces her to Mia, who is Killian's cousin and his new gaming master. She excuses herself to go to the bathroom, and she hears steps right behind her, and Killian says that if she runs that he's gonna chase her, and if he catches her he's gonna fuck her. And she doesn't even think about it. She literally runs in the bathroom and she tries slamming the door, and he jams his hand in there to push it away, and now she's trapped in the bathroom with him.
What are they gonna do?
He grabs her by the hair and he puts his hand on her mouth as he pulls her against his chest, and then he whispers in her ear, you don't want your brother to come in and see his sister getting fucked raw, do you?
Bet you're wet like a dirty little slut. He effortlessly pushes down my shorts so they pool around my ankles and slips a ruthless hand inside my underwear, cupping me. I knew you'd be soaking for me, baby. You like being manhandled till you can't breathe. You like how I confiscate your will. It turns you the fuck on, doesn't it? Admit it. You don't like my nice side. You're a fucking whore for my devil side.
Yes, she is. I bet she is.
And then he pushes 3 fingers inside of her all at the same time.
Look at how your cunt is thrilled with my fingers. You wanted me to find you and pin you down and force you to come. You wanted me to make your little pussy sore so you feel my cock with every step. You want me, baby.
Say it.
This is a teenage boy.
Stop. Reminder.
No.
He's 19.
No, don't ruin it. He's a man.
He's a man.
So he lets her have an orgasm, but she's still mad at him for the Instagram picture. So she's like, fuck you. And he's like, the world needed to know that you're mine. I'm not going to apologize for that. Sorry. She's like, I will never choose to be with you. And he replies with, newsflash, you already are. He fucks her and he pulls her hair and her head's up. So she's watching him fuck her in the mirror. He's like, say you're mine. And she was like, I'll never be yours.
Yes, you will.
She admits that he could fucking kill her and she would still not admit that she is his. It's the last part of her that she truly has of herself, and she refuses to hand it over. It's a week later, and he's used the same manipulation tactic that he used on Brandon with all of her friends. He sits with them every single day at lunchtime. He indulges in everyone's interests and makes them come out of their shell to accept him. He never uses violence or threatens them in front of people. That's just in private for her.
Oh, cute.
He's just overall just completely inserted himself in her life. After class, her and Stuart leave to go to the cafeteria, but she's stopped in the hallway by Cherry. Cherry's, of course, an instant bitch to her, and she just says, what the fuck does he see in you? She says, obviously whatever he doesn't see in you. Anyways, I'm leaving.
Get her.
This is below me. She just threatens her and just says, you better watch your back, bitch. Get him to leave you alone. And she's like, what if I can't? Like, what if he's obsessed with me? And she just says, fuck someone else and he'll never want to touch you again. She leaves school and she's supposed to meet up with Killian for dinner, but she ends up going to his house 2 hours early, and she finds all the boys at the pool. Killian pulls her on his lap, and it's been eating at her ever since earlier, so she asks him if he really wants to kill. And he says that he wants to kill more than anything, and that feeling their last breath turning to nothingness and then cutting them up and seeing them inside is the only thing that he's ever desired since he was about 7. He thinks about it probably 24 times per day.
Oh my god.
The words obviously are a huge shock, and he's like, see? You're disgusted. And she's like, listen, sorry. Like, I don't get told this every day.
Yeah, I feel like that's a very normal reaction. So he tells her, he's like, just run. And she doesn't. She's like, no, like, I want to listen to you. I want to know why you feel the need to manipulate and kill. She asks why he hasn't actually taken a human life. And he says that he has little impulse control and that he doesn't want to be a slave to his urges or to be ruled by them. And he doesn't want to lose control and get locked up for it. So he represses as much as he can. She asks if repressing his urges causes pain. And he's like, oh, like, are you starting to care?
Yeah, she has feelings.
You don't.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Since he's been around her, he thinks about killing less. She asks hypothetically what would happen if she runs away and chooses someone else over him. And he says that he'd never let her go, that he'd slice their throat and then claim her in their blood.
Normal.
I hate this man.
If your man doesn't say that to you, does he even care?
Green flag, green flag, green flag.
Red flag, red flag. Killian removes his shirt and then jumps in the pool. And as that happens, she gets an unknown number text message that says, be careful who you fraternize with, bitch.
Cherry, is that you?
Killian's staring at Glenn and he's definitely starting to catch non-feeling feelings because he doesn't have any. And he's thinking to himself that this is the closest to heaven that he will ever be because she's the closest thing to an angel he's ever seen. He's like, I know I'm going to hell, but this is a fucking angel.
You are going to, sir.
She's like, what if I want to experiment? And he was like, well, you don't see me going around hurting your kindergarten crush or high school sweetheart. Because he said that if she ever touches someone that he's going to kill them. But just to get a rise out of him, she's like, I'll have you know that my secondary boyfriend has a huge dick. And he was like, are you trying to get under my skin? Because it's working. And I need his name right now. She won't give him his name.
He's like, I'll go kill that man right now.
She's like, you don't get to be jealous of me. What about your ex-girlfriends? And he admits that he's never had a girlfriend, not until her. Killian drops her off at her building and he's driving off and he notices that there's 5 cars following him the second he's off the main road. He's blinded by high beams and it's a truck that's speeding straight in his direction. He steps on the gas and they crash head on and he's wrenched out of the car by a very familiar and annoying voice that says, your 7 days are up, motherfucker. And then he slips in and out of consciousness.
Landon.
He's having trouble focusing and is in extreme pain and he notices that both of his wrists are bound behind his back and his legs are strapped to the legs of the metal chair that he's in. Landon is with his cousin Eli. Eli is Creighton's brother. Creighton walks in and it throws Eli off. Landon replies that he's the one that called him over and Eli says, well, maybe I should call Brandon, knowing that that would throw Landon off. Killian was just like, you know, making it about himself. He's like, don't you think this is a little extreme just for me? Like, I'm flattered and everything, but getting the whole family involved? Oh my God. And then Landon steps back in and he's like, it's not as extreme as you sleeping with my sister when I clearly told you not to. They start waterboarding him. And just when he's about to pass out from lack of oxygen, they cut off the water and let him breathe again. And he finally gets his air back. Creighton, who's the one that was holding his shoulder, lets go and just walks out. And he's like, I'm bored. Killian tells Landon
that his own brother and sister don't even like him, so he fills the emptiness with sculptures and bullshit, and it's so sad. And Landon takes the club that he has in his hands and hits him in the face with it so hard that he falls backwards in the chair and his body hits the ground. So he's like bleeding out, and then they waterboard him again.
Jesus.
He has this moment where he's like, do you know how everyone has their life flashed before their eyes? But in this moment, that's not what he sees. He doesn't see his life. He just sees Glendon smiling. And then he thinks to himself, it's like he can hear her calling his name. Only the waterboarding stops and reality comes back to him. And it really is Glendon, but she's not alone. She's with Brandon.
Good. I don't know why I'm cheering on.
I know, right? Yay! Welcome to the team. Landon tries telling her that Killian is manipulating her and he will eventually hurt her. And she snaps at him finally and she starts sticking up for herself. She says that she's old enough to make her own choices, that she's choosing him and she's choosing someone for herself without having to go through his approval process, that she's tired of his controlling ways and she's tired of trying to avoid him, and that they shouldn't be scared of their own brother. She tells him to let Killian go and to stop meddling in their business. And he's like, well, what if I say no? And she's like, I will tell all of our family about all of your actions and they're going to put you on a leash. And she rushes toward Killian, and Killian can finally relax now knowing that she's at his side. He knew that Brandon would come because he knew that Eli doesn't like when his brother Creighton is involved in family business. And when he saw Eli take out his phone and text something, he knew it was probably to Brandon as a form of retaliation. So it was only a matter of time before Brandon told Glendon, and they both showed up together. He knew that if Glendon saw Landon torture him, that she would be on his side, not her brother's. And now there's no way that Landon will ever be able to get between him and her if he doesn't want to be the one who's hated. They arrive back at the Heathen's mansion, and Killian was seen by the doctor. Glendon's still super worried about him and is kind of overwhelmed with her feelings for him right now, because she's not sure when Killian became such a vital part of her life or why she feels so on edge at the thought of him being hurt, since he coerced and threatened and gave her no choice but to submit to him. It wasn't until she saw him in danger that she realized that he brings out the best and worst in her, and that she's addicted to the feeling of how he puts her above everything else. She's completely lost in her lust feelings, and the door opens and Nikolai walks in the room, and Gareth covers up what happened and says that they found him near campus, and for more details they'll have to hear what happened when Killian wakes up. She thanks Gareth for covering for Landon, and he's like, I did not cover for Landon at all. I'm just leaving the ball in Killian's court so he can personally deal with the situation when he wakes up. Gareth asks her if she's actually worried for him, and she's like, yeah, you're not. And he's like, no, he's literally a psycho. Like, he killed that part of me a long time ago. You don't want to hear this, but I'm sure he'll do it to you eventually too. He basically just kind of says that Killian is a shit human, and she's having his back, and she's like, well, do you see us manipulating or hurting or discarding our morals just to adapt to him? And he just says, what is that supposed to mean? She just responds with, you're choosing to be like them. If you see nothing wrong with that, then I feel sorry for you. As he starts walking away, she calls his name and he turns around and she's like, by the way, our deal is off. I'm not going to stab Killian in the back just so you can hurt him. And deep down, she knows that Gareth doesn't want to hurt Killian either.
That's his brother.
She lays down and snuggles with Killian, and she's having a dream that she's being rubbed on by his very hard cock.
I want to shoot everyone who dares to look in your direction or cause you pain. I want to bathe in their fucking blood and throw their insides at your feet. I want to fuck you there too, in their blood, to stake a claim. You'd probably bolt if I'd said this to you directly, so I won't. I'll just keep owning you over and over until you can no longer think about leaving me. I'll be your shadow so no one dares to hurt you.
This is a teenage boy.
Yeah, a fucking psycho. Fucking psycho.
He's a man, he's 30.
He's not.
Her eyes fly open and she's completely naked, and she realized that it was not a dream, as her nipples are being pinched and her throat is being squeezed. He starts fucking her and then says that her ass is feeling lonely and starts fingering her booty hole.
Look at it clenching around my finger, wanting to take part in the fun. You'll let me fuck you raw until you're screaming my name, won't you?
Oh my god.
No. You'll let me raw dog it in your asshole, won't you?
She was just a virgin like a week ago.
I know, now look at her.
She still refuses to say that she's his, and he said that maybe I should fill you with my baby, that way you can't escape me.
Oh my god.
He's got bad genes.
You will make a serial killer.
You will birth a monster.
A monster.
He shows a moment of weakness where he says, you chose me. And she says, what? And he says, back there with your brothers and that fucker Eli. I'll make sure you always choose me as much as I choose you. It's been 3 weeks since she lost her virginity to Killian, and slowly their lives have merged together. She can't sleep on anyone else's bed other than Killian's because that's where she's become the most comfortable, and she feels like she's losing control of her life, which is why she's at a pub right now drinking away with her roommates, Remington, Brandon, and Creighton. She's getting pissed drunk, and she wants to play Never Have I Ever. As they're about to start playing the game, Killian and Nikolai walk in and ask to join them. Glenn starts the game off by saying never has she ever done anything illegal, and of course Nikolai and Creighton do a shot, and then surprisingly Ava takes a shot.
Wow, Ava.
Glenn asks Killian why he's not drinking, and he's like, do you have any proof? I know I'm in the mafia, but I'm not telling you shit. It's Killian's turn, and he says, never have I ever been in love.
Put a finger down, girl.
Just as Glenn was about to take her shot, Killian snatches it from her and downs it with utter ease, and he says that she's too drunk and that he'll take her shots for her.
But was that him telling her, like, I love you, bitch?
Nikolai was like, never have I ever fucked or experimented with someone in the same sex. Ava drinks, and then Killian drinks, and he, like, she looks at him, and he's like, what, you think all the people I experimented on were just female? Like, as long as there's a hole, I was fixing to fuck it.
Oh, I believe it.
Killian puts a very drunk Glenn in the car, and she wants to know what happens if she starts having feelings for him. And he's like, why does something have to happen? And she's like, well, that's usually how relationships work. And he's like, I already feel things for you right now. Like, there's annoyance and anger. She's like, that's not what I'm asking for. And he's like, well, tell me. And she's like, I want something that you're never going to be able to give me. What if I ask you for your heart? Like, will you be able to give it to me? No, you won't, because you don't have that. Like, all your emotions are learned. So if you say you like me or adore me or even love me, I'll never believe them because you don't believe them. It's something that you've learned to say and to act over this time.
And that's true. He feels nothing. Nothing.
I literally don't believe it.
You should.
He tells her that he's given her monogamy, that he's never given anyone else dates, that he's put in time and effort, and he really wanted to fucking kill her brother, and he chose not to. He chose to fight his demons, and he's choosing to be tolerant and nice when that doesn't come naturally to him. He would just like it if she would stop being so difficult every step of the way, because he really is trying.
Okay, but...
I mean, I know that she's asking for the bare minimum.
I was like, she's asking for very little.
I know.
And he's like,
but he's trying.
I took you on a date. I've never done that for anybody else. What do you want from me?
She starts crying, and she's like, what you're giving me isn't enough. I just want to go home. So she closes her eyes and starts falling asleep in the car, and he wakes her up, and they don't wake up in front of their dorm, though. They're in front of a plane. And she's like, where are we going? And he's like, home.
Oh, where is that?
Now, if you don't remember, Glenn is terrified of flying. She's freaking out because she didn't get to call her grandpa, and she's scared that she's never going to be able to talk to him again. It's her, Killian, and Gareth going home together to Killian's family's house. He asks her to come sit on his lap, so she sits on it, and it really does help her calm down, although she's still really anxious. They're still holding each other, and Glenn says that it's so unfair that he feels so safe, and then she falls asleep in his arms. He's thinking to himself that she feels safe too, and then he finally lets himself fall asleep. He wakes up to himself hugging a body pillow and the voices of Gareth saying, Jesus Christ, Glendon, that's not how you're supposed to do it. And his eyes shoot open and he's like, what the fuck is going on? And he looks around the plane and he finds them sitting at a table playing Uno together.
Oh no, they were fucking.
Is that what he thought? Maybe, because he's like, Jesus Christ, Glendon.
That's not how you do it. You little virgin. Draw four.
Uno reverse. As he walks over to them, Gareth is about to leave, and Glenn's like, don't be silly. Just because your brother's here does not mean we can't all play together. Usually, like, Gareth and Killian do not bond like this, but, like, Glenn is, like, slowly bringing them together. They land in New York, and they pull up to his family's house, and Killian's mom, Raina, is one of the only people, now besides Glendon, whose emotions matter to him. She's hugging him and giving them all of her love, and she finally takes a step back and looks at Glendon. They do, like, a polite introduction, and Raina asks who she's here with, and she says Killian, and her smile brightens even further. She says that she's so glad that Killian finally found someone and brought them home, because she thought that he would die alone, that he was allergic to monogamy.
Imagine hearing your mom being like, I thought he would die alone.
He's 19. He has 60 more years left to get it together. Calm down.
That's true. I
keep forgetting that he's 19.
He's 30!
Yeah, what the fuck?
He's a baby. He's a
child. Did you want him to bring a woman home to you, Mom?
They're in the mafia. Yeah. They're supposed to marry early anyways, right?
I don't know what they're supposed to do.
Any mafia listeners here? Can you give us advice?
No.
Let us know.
Please, nope, don't let us know. Your secret is safe with us. Please don't reach out.
Killian's dad comes out and the mood instantly changes. He hugs Gareth immediately, but when he sees Killian, he just nods and says, "Kill, to what do we owe this visit?"
Ew.
He goes over and introduces himself to Glendon. He immediately sees the resemblance to Aiden, who's Eli and Creighton's dad, who is Glenn's uncle. And his dad says that she seems like a good person, so he doesn't see why she's there with his son unless he threatened her, and that he knows that he's very capable of that, and he doesn't want an innocent girl from a prestigious family caught in his webs and not do something about it.
Oh, he just read his son to filth.
Once again, Glendon sticks up for him and she's like, "He didn't threaten me. I chose to be here. I had a chance to leave him and I chose not to."
You did not have a chance to leave him.
Yeah, she did. Kind of.
Tiny bit, maybe.
Not really, but in her dreams.
Not really.
After dinner, they go and sit down on the couch and watch a movie, and everyone falls asleep, so they go back to his room, and Glendon's like, "Wait, before we have sex, I want to sketch something real quick. It's just on the tip of my brain, and I only have a feeling of what it is, so I have to draw it down before it's gone." And so he grabs her paper and pencil, and she starts drawing, and then he starts rubbing her arm, and he's like, "How about we do both of our own thing?" And she's like, "I'm not going to sketch while you're touching me." Like, and he's like, "It's not a request. Either you do this while sketching or without it." So she's like, "I'm just gonna pretend like you're not there." He's like, "You can try." So as she's sketching, he's like dirty talking and like touching her, and he takes her dress that she's wearing and legit like rips it shred by shred until it's all pieces in the ground.
He just rips her dress up.
I know, I'd be pissed.
She's like, "I really like that dress."
He starts talking about the first time on the cliff and he didn't touch her breasts, but her nipples were so hard, begging to be fucked. And she's shaking her head no. And then he pinches her nipples super hard and he's like, "Look at you moaning and crying at the same time. Pick one, my little slut." And she's like, "Fuck you." And he said, "In a moment, but there's really something that they need to settle." That she might act like that night she hated all of it, but the fact of the matter is that she got turned on by having her will confiscated. He knows that she didn't understand it herself, but he could. And she's still denying it, but her voice was filled with so much lust. And he's like, "You're still lying." And then slips his hand down her underwear and cups her pussy. And he's like, "You probably are soaked right now. More than you were that night."
She's like, "No."
I cried the entire way home.
She was like, "I was terribly depressed."
He demands that she doesn't stop sketching, and then he lifts her by the throat and kneels right behind her. They're in his room, they're in front of a huge mirror, and she's on all fours right now, and she's sketching, and he's mounted behind her, choking her with one hand and like grabbing her hip with the other, and he's just like rubbing his dick on her pussy, like teasing her after he said that to her.
Hot.
Yeah, hot.
He's driving her crazy, and she's begging him to fuck her, and he's like, "Let's play a game first. I won't fuck you until you do two things. The first is that you say you're mine, and the second is that you say you wanted me the first time that we met." And she says no, and he slaps her pussy.
Ah!
She's like, "That hurts so good. I just came a little."
Oh my god.
Girl!
So he's like, "Let's try this again. Say you're mine." And she still says no. She refuses to. He's like, "Obviously, this punishment is not working. You're dripping all over my hand, all over the carpet. Maybe we should change punishment methods, because you're enjoying this way too much. So all you have to do is just say one now. I don't care which one, just say one." She still shakes her head, and he slaps her even harder this time, where she thinks she's gonna black out from the mixture of pleasure and pain. And he's like, "Just fucking say it." And then she admits that she wanted him that first night. She doesn't understand why, but she did want him, and she calls him a fucking bastard. And then he finally fucks her.
Oh my goodness.
Just when she's about to close her eyes to enjoy this beautiful sexy bang, he demands, "Don't stop sketching, my little rabbit. Show me what those hands can make while you're filled with my cock." She admits to herself that he's completely ruined all sex for her, because she doesn't think she'll ever be able to find pleasure if she wasn't being choked, thrown down, or properly claimed. Honestly, same.
Yeah, I also think she couldn't have like a normal sex. Not to say this isn't like normal, but it's a fine line, but she could never just have like a normal one night stand with somebody and be like satisfied with that.
No. She'd be like, "Why aren't you hitting me?"
She's like, "Slap my pussy, do it."
What, you're going to start out with one finger? What the fuck?
Go ahead. Fist me. Do it.
Oh, no.
As much as she hates to admit it, she doesn't think she'll ever be able to enjoy this with anyone but Killian because she trusts him and he likes to hurt her, but he doesn't want to break her. Just when things are getting all lovey-dovey and she's about to come, he's like, oop, the back door is lonely. Let me stretch out that bad boy. And then he pops two fingers in and then three fingers into her booty hole.
That's a lot of fingers for a booty hole.
I mean, at once, yeah. You gotta like start slow. Do one, yeah. Then two.
He starts with two and then he immediately goes to three. Ah! He stops fingering her asshole and then he goes, this may hurt. And then slowly slides his cock in her ass. She starts having tears on her cheek, but she realizes the tears are of relief. And she's relieved that he didn't take it easy on her. That he didn't really give her the chance of like being like, all right, so I'm gonna fuck your ass today.
Charlotte's face.
I don't like it.
Your ass feels as good as your cunt, baby. Feel how it's swallowing my cock? He slides out a little, then thrusts back in. You belong to me. Thrust. This ass belongs to me. He rams three fingers in my pussy. This cunt is also mine. He grabs my jaw and forces his index and middle fingers between my lips. This mouth was the first to become mine. He forces my jaw up with his remaining fingers, so I stare at the mirror. Then he pulls me so my back slams against his chest and his teeth bite down on my earlobe before he murmurs in dark words. Next time you say what I'm offering is not enough, I want you to remember this view. I want you to remember how every part of you is fucking mine.
No.
I think she'll remember.
Yeah. I think she'll have a hard time forgetting.
Yep, for sure. As they come down, she looks at the masterpiece that she's made, and it's them, naked, joined, and absolutely terrifying.
Terrifying, yeah.
That is spooky.
Glenn FaceTimes her mom and she sees that it's dark out and she's like, where are you? Why does it look like night? And she's like, I'm in New York. And she's like, why are you in New York? Like, did you get kidnapped? She's like, technically, no. She's like, what do you mean technically? And she's like, well, I'm here to meet Killian's parents. Killian is my boyfriend. I'm so sorry it took me so long to tell you. And she's like, it's about time. And she's like, wait, you know? And her mom was like, of course I know. I could just tell because she knows her daughter well. She was patient and she respected her boundaries and she wanted her to come to her to tell her.
That's a good mommy.
We love that. We absolutely love that. She was just talking to her mom and she's just like telling her that she really likes Killian, but she's scared to fall so hard like this. She also opened up to her mom for the first time in a really long time and told her about her suicidal thoughts. But she realized that after meeting Killian, that even if she is less talented than Landon and Brandon and her mom, that she still matters to everyone in the family. And that's what's been keeping her going every single day. Her mom instantly really likes Killian because she has a feeling that he's the reason behind her change. And she really wants to meet him and thank him for bringing her back to life.
If you only knew, mom. Mm. If you only knew.
So after the call with her mom, Glendon goes into Killian's kitchen and Killian's mom, Raina, is in the kitchen. She makes her some herbal tea and Glendon asks if she can ask about the incident that happened with Killian when he was 7 with the mice. And she's like, he told you about that? And she's like, yeah, he said that you've been afraid of him ever since then. Like, is that true? She's like, that's not true. I would never be scared of my son.
You should be.
You should be. And she's like, just don't tell Killian that like I said anything to you. And she's like, girl, don't worry about it. Us girls have to stick together. As she's about to go back into the room, she gets a text from an unknown number with a video attached to it. She opened up the video and it's Devlin sitting in a small room. Across from him is the red mask. And Devlin is sitting there looking absolutely devastated. And the red mask says, what a weakling. How about you drop dead? And then Devlin's eyes just shut down and the video ends. And at this point, Glenn is crying. And Killian comes behind her and he's like, what are you looking at? And she just drops the cup like dramatically to the ground. And she shows him the video and she's like, is this you? And he doesn't answer her. And she's like, is this you? And then he's like, so what if it is? She turns around to leave and he grabs her shoulders and she's like, don't fucking touch me, you monster. Like, don't ever come near me again. I will go in your parents' room. I will scream at the top of my lungs. Leave me the fuck alone. She just starts running and crying and she feels the intense need to just stop everything and end it all like Devlin did. She just feels so betrayed and overwhelmed, but instead she just runs.
Devlin killed himself, right?
Yeah.
Killian punches a hole in the wall and he tries to stop himself from not going after her. And he's like, fuck it. Like, I told her time and time again that escaping me was not an option. So he grabs his mama's car keys and he opens up the app that he put on her phone.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And he tracks her. He like gets in the car. He pulls in front of her. She like runs into him. It's this whole thing. He catches her. They get in a fight and she's basically like, how could you have been playing with my emotions this whole time, knowing the relationship that Devlin and I had? And he's like, relationship? You knew him for 2 months before his death. You felt close to him because he fed on your insecurities and he was manipulating you the whole time.
Oh.
I don't know why he was manipulating you, but I can see manipulation. I see through it because I fucking do it. But I did not kill him. And she's like, it doesn't matter. He was depressed and suicidal and you basically drove him to it. He was trying to explain to her that he was neither depressed or suicidal and he might have fooled you, but he never was able to fool Killian. She just told him that she wanted to go home to London. And she points to her chest and she's like, it fucking hurts right here. If you keep forcing me, I will throw myself in front of this car. He told her that he would never let her have those suicidal thoughts again. And right now he's the one that's triggering them. So even though it's her anger talking, he doesn't want to see her act on those emotions ever. So he says that he's going to take her back to the private jet and have the pilot take her back to London.
Third act breakup.
Here it is.
Killian thinks that Gareth was the one that sent her the video. Gareth says that it wasn't him.
I wonder who sent it.
Who do you think sent it?
Cherry.
Oh.
No, I feel like it's not her, actually. I feel like she's not in the group anymore. Maybe it is Cherry. I don't know.
But we'll see. Give me the tea. Glendon arrives in her family's mansion and she's eating her feelings with a tube of cherry and chocolate ice cream. Her grandpa finds her in the kitchen and he could tell that she was crying. And he's like, what's wrong? And she's like, I just put my trust in someone and they murdered it.
The drama.
I know. He's probably like, oh, you silly 19-year-old.
Her grandpa just picks her up and says, we're a king. We hit back. And then he picks up her phone and calls her dad. And he's like, there's an emergency with your daughter. He's like, what's going on? He's like, someone broke her heart. We need to break his legs.
Go Gramps.
By the time that she gets back to campus, she's like fuming with all the destructive energy that's been going on through her mind. And she's like, I want revenge. Her grandpa's driver, Moses, she asks if she could take a picture with him. And he's like, I'll do whatever I have to do for you to get back at the loser. So she takes a picture of her holding his hand on the armrest of the chair. And she puts it on Instagram and she captured it. I finally found my type. Older men. Yum.
Okay.
Yummy. Not a teenage boy.
I got myself a real man.
60 seconds passes and Killian texts her and he's like, who is that? He's literally gonna die. I know you're provoking me on purpose. It's fucking working. My promise to have you bounce on my cock and his blood is still in motion. She puts her phone in her pocket and drives to the place that started it all and goes to the cliff's edge. As she's at the cliff's edge, she's thinking about everything that she was pondering about her relationship with Devlin and how it really didn't feel like a friendship and he was never really happy for her. How he always loved to talk about himself and how his battle with depression and how no one understood him. His death hit her harder because she was right there when it happened. Like, she was literally right next to him in the car and he was trying to convince her to die with him.
What the fuck?
When she said no, he got very angry and he's like, aren't you lucky to have people who love you? And she's like, Dev, you have me. He said, since when do you think you're enough? You're nothing more than a fucking coward. You sing this tune of being misunderstood because your art is compared to your mother's and your brother's, but maybe it's because it's mediocre as fuck. What kind of artist is scared shitless of ending their life? How about you start practicing what you preach?
Devlin's a bitch.
And he yells at her to get the fuck out of his car and calls her a coward again. And she opens the door and remembers feeling super, super dizzy. She said that they were drinking drinks earlier, but then she watches Devlin rev the car forward at full speed and tumble over the cliff. She was screaming his name, crawling at the edge of the cliff because her legs wouldn't work. And 2 days later, they found a body and that was identified by his roommate.
Holy shit.
She was just going through memory lane and just thinking about all that as someone comes up behind her and says, miss me? It's Devlin.
What?
And she's like, what the fuck? You're dead. Like, I saw you drive yourself off of a cliff. Like, they even found your body. He's like, you saw that because you were drugged out of your mind. The drinks that you were drinking earlier were laced.
What the fuck?
As for the body, it's nothing some connections I couldn't take care of. Since I lied, I'm not an orphan. My family's alive, rich, and part of the mafia. He's part of the serpents.
I was not expecting that at all.
He tells her that her visiting his death site would have been very endearing if she wasn't such a whore for taking his sister's place. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Who is your sister? And he says, Cherry. Ugh, fuck the whole family.
Yeah, it was Cherry. She's a bitch.
And she's like, why would you go through all the trouble of faking your death just to join this club? And he's like, no, it's for power. I don't need to be part of the heathens because I'm a serpent. I want to erase them off the planet. You were always my mission. You served as my opening to Landon and the elites. Do you think I would ever pick someone as dull as you? And then I kept talking about you around Killian to pique his curiosity. And surprise, he fell right for it. Like, why not kill two birds with one stone? So now it's time for you to play your role.
Die, bitch.
He grabs her by the hair and starts punching her in the face repeatedly and beating her to a pulp.
Holy shit.
So she falls to the ground and then he starts kicking her in the ribs and in the stomach, but she's not backing down. She's like egging him on, saying like, I'm sorry that I ever fucking cried over you, that I ever had one shred of compassion towards you. You will never get away with this. As she's like getting basically like curb stomped over here.
She's like, you will never get away with this.
Yeah.
Go off, girl.
He's like, you are a fucking idiot. Whether you run back to Killian or Landon, they'll know that we did it. And what we want is war. We don't care who is with. We want blood.
Isn't faking your death, like, super illegal?
Yeah, but he's, like, in the mafia, so.
Well, true, true, true.
She laughs so hard. She sounds like she's going crazy. And he's like, what the fuck are you on? She's like, you will never get what you want. And then he punches her so hard, she sees stars and she's about to pass out. And all she hears is laughing. She's thinking to herself, she's just gonna wait until she heals and then she's gonna go straight to Jeremy or Gareth so that way they take care of it, and she just needs to go to someone reasonable and not too violent to start a war. When she opens her eyes, she finds Killian lifting her head up, looking at her, saying, who did this to you? She can't keep her eyes open, so she lets them close and a pained moan leaves her lips. Killian's never known anger until he found Glendon half unconscious laying by the cliff. She wasn't answering his calls and he used the tracker to find out where she went, and when he found out she was at the cliff, it made him super uneasy because especially of how she was feeling before he left, he was like, fuck, I don't want her to kill herself.
That's my girl.
When he walked up to her, he said that she was almost unrecognizable. She had bruises covering her entire body. Both of her eyes were swollen shut. She had blood all over her. Her skin was basically like used as a human punching bag. He was searching her body to make sure that there was no open wounds. Something slips from in between her stomach and her leg, and it's a skull mask with a toothy grin, which is a symbol for the serpents. He took her to the hospital just to make sure that everything was okay and there was no internal bleeding. And as soon as he got the okay, they brought him back to the mansion. Brandon and Landon are there with him, and Landon says that he wants in on whatever he's planning and they'll work together because it's personal. As Killian and Gareth walk out of the house, they see Cherry walking towards the main house, trying to sneak in towards the back entrance. She's supposed to be locked up with everything going on, but obviously she persuaded some of the guards to let her go. They find out that Cherry is the one that used Gareth to get into the club, stole access to the security footage, and she was the one that invited Glendon to the initiation. She said that she didn't want to do all of this, that he made her do that, and that he knows about her drug addiction, and that if she didn't cooperate, he was going to tell Dad, who would have locked her up in rehab, and that she didn't know that he was going to hurt Glendon. Devlin is the one that shot Killian with the arrow. Devlin was the one that was sending Glendon the anonymous text messages to keep her on edge.
Oh.
Cherry helped them with the inside knowledge on how to sneak into the serpent's compound as part of their deal. All five of the serpents were wearing skull masks and they don't know which one Devlin is, so they have to take them all out. As the attacks happen, Killian is hit from behind with a baseball bat and it breaks his arm immediately. Devlin tries hitting him again with the baseball bat, but he catches it with his good hand and then starts basically beating the fuck out of his legs. Glenn wakes up. Brandon is beside her and he tells her that Killian and Landon went to go fuck up the serpents, and naturally she panics and she's like, fuck, this is exactly what he wanted. I have to try to stop this, but she's so weak that she can't. The door swings open and Killian is sitting there covered in blood with a limp arm, but his face appears clean and ethereal and twisted. He immediately goes to her side and asks her if she's okay, if she needs any painkillers, but she just whispers, did you kill him? And he's like, what if I did? Her heart just breaks and then he just says, please don't shut the door on my face. She goes on saying that she doesn't doesn't like seeing him this bloody, that Devlin deserved to be beaten, but not to be killed. Killian said, just so you know, no, I did not kill Devlin, but he will sure as fuck wish for death.
Yeah.
So he says that he let Devlin live because he plans to make his life hell and that he's going to wait until he recovered to beat him up again and again, and he's going to tremble in fear at the mere mention of his name. He did think of it from her perspective, and he's also aware that if he takes one life, he might need to feel that rush again until he gets caught, and that's not an option now because that would mean that he has to leave her.
Understand this, Glendon. There's nothing noble or tender about what I feel for you. It's a violent volcano of obsession, possession, and deranged lust. If you want love, then I do love you, but it's the unorthodox version of love. I love you enough to let you within my walls. I love you enough to let you talk to my demons. I love you enough to allow you to have a hold over me when I've never allowed anyone to have the power to destroy me from the inside out.
He promises that he will never allow anyone to hurt her again, and then she whispers, I'm yours. And he's like, repeat it. And she says, I'm yours, Killian. I think I've been yours since we first met. And then they hug because she's covered in bruises and beaten to a pulp. And he can't fuck her, even though he wants to.
Of course.
She says that she loves her monster more than she'll ever comprehend, think, or know. And he loves her to the point of madness. The end.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
Woof. I think I'll give it... I agree with yours. 3.5. I agree with that one. It's a good book. Like, I liked it. There were just little bits of it. I was like, okay.
Do you think Killian is sexy?
No, unfortunately.
They don't pissed. Know what they're talking about.
Would you trade places with Glendon?
No. Sounds scary as fuck.
Yep.
Scary as fuck.
So next week, we're going to tell Riley all about Icebreaker by Hannah Grace. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
We got a hockey player and a little ice skater. And I think they're going to fuck.
Oh.
I think there's going to be some hockey. Maybe like a figure skating competition. Maybe like a third act breakup. And he's going to come to her skating competition. And he's going to get out there on the ice with her. And he's going to show her that he can skate too. And they're going to just fall in love.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. I should write books, huh?
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten for early access ad-free episodes. And at the second tier, you have access to a podcast of unfortunate events where Riley and I will be doing a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket.
Woo! Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
Hey guys, it's Ashley Canetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. My friend said this once and I have adopted it as my own. She goes, I'm not a crunchy mom, but I'm a crispy mom. And I'm like, that is me too. Like, of course we're going to have our junk food days, but primarily when we're eating inside the house, I am very particular about what I buy and make for my kids because sometimes, you know, like for example, they're going to eat chicken nuggets, right? They're going to eat macaroni and cheese. But I'm trying to find the best possible versions of those. And in order to do that, I use this really great app when I'm grocery shopping. It's called Wise Code. And it's basically an ultra processed food detector. All you do is scan a product to instantly see if it's ultra processed. They go beyond the label. You're able to view nutrition quality and health quality. It makes grocery shopping easy. It helps you make more informed decisions for your family. It's available on the App Store. I love, love, love it. It is exactly what a crispy mom needs. You can download Wise Code, the ultra processed food detector, on the App Store today.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.